us.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. The Cleveland Cavaliers are in a tough spot. They're down 0-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals. They lost to the Knicks last night, 109-93. Josh Hart had 26 to lead New York. Donovan Mitchell also had 26 to lead the Cavs. Game 3 is Saturday night in Cleveland at 8. The Guardians are hot. They've won 6 straight. They completed a 4-game sweep of the Detroit Tigers yesterday, winning 3-1. They start a series in Philadelphia with the Phillies at 6:40 tonight. The Reds had an off day yesterday. They're starting a home series with St. Louis this evening at 6:40. You can hear that on The Fan too at 6:10. The Buckeye baseball season came to an end with a 3-0 loss to Michigan at the Big Ten tournament out in Iowa. World Hockey Championships right now. Canada leads Slovenia 2-0. Denton Matejchuk has one of the goals for Team Canada. Breaking sports news as it happens on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
So where's the office back at Division?
In the office, baby. Going out.
All right, here we go. Into a wet and wild weekend. Glad you're aboard, Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes, and the Loose Cannon. Boys, how we feeling?
What up? Feeling good? Yeah, it's Friday. Deal or No Deal is on the TV in the studio, and it's an extended weekend. It's a holiday weekend. So I know the weather outside right now is looking great.
Frightful.
But listen, man, I'm feeling pretty good today. How are you, my man?
Not bad.
Good.
Not bad.
Okay.
Here we go.
Yep.
This is spring in Ohio. I say it every year. We don't dry out till June. We really don't. And maybe parts of June are still wet. You know what I've said for 15 years. Cold, wet, and hot. Those are our seasons. Like it, lump it, whatever. It's here. All right. So we've got a lot to do today. Of course, we'll start with the Cavs. But I do want to mention that we'll do Gold Jacket Thursday today on a Friday. Because up in Canton, they're doing their big ribs burn off weekend. I hope that the weather doesn't burn them right off. But one of the legends of the game, Jack Ham, who was on the steel curtain, outside linebacker number 59 in black and gold, teamed with Jack Lambert. The team was absolutely loaded, 4 titles, 6 years, that's all. He's going to come on at 1 o'clock. He is going to be one of the judges. For the rib off tomorrow, yeah, a guy named Ham.
If I do judging ribs, the ribs, I gotta have some sauce. I've never really enjoyed a dry rub on my ribs. Like it really hasn't worked out well for my taste buds. Do you like dry rub seasoning on your ribs? Or do you need that sauce?
Sauce,
yeah.
I've tried the dry rub on the wings. Not liking it.
Yeah.
Nah, it's all right. It keeps them kind of crispy and all that.
Yeah, no,
but no. But he'll be on today at 1 o'clock, and we'll talk about his legendary career and everything that's going up in Kent. Because, by the way, admission is free all 3 days, and they're doing just everything up there. I mean, there's beer and seltzers and live music and fireworks, hopefully, if the weather holds out, and a car show, and just everything up there. So he'll be a big part of it. The Hall of Fame Ribs Burn-Off. You can check it out online. You can check it out online.
Shout out to James.
And, I'm actually just reading the event schedule now. They've got bands and all sorts of stuff. I'm really looking forward to talking to him because he was part of such an iconic franchise, and they weren't good when he got there. But he's a kid from Western PA. And, you know, one of my favorite football movies of all time is All the Right Moves. It's Tom Cruise is in it. And Sean Penn's brother's in it. And there's kind of a scene where they're going through kind of the end of high school. And Penn is actually getting married to his high school sweetheart. And it's based in the 80s. And they kind of look at each other. They're having like one cold beer on his wedding day before he takes his vows. And Tom Cruise is trying to convince him, like, hey, we still got to go play football, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we still got to get scholarships and go play football. And he's like, hey, man, I got what I want. Like, I'm getting married. I'm going to have a kid. Like, and Cruz is like, you're my best friend. Like, we're going to go play football together. We're going to go to college and play football. And kind of like the marriage thing is ruining everything here. And they kind of just come to grips with it. Yeah. And they just look at each other and they kind of clink the beers together. And they're like, I guess how we all, you know, the two of us always dreamed of being a Steeler. You know, and it's just, and it kind of hit me. And now we're having Jack Ham on today. So a lot of nostalgia with that, with the steel curtain. So we'll talk to him then.
Yeah, that'll be really cool because, you know, when you mentioned the steel curtain and the guys that were a part of that defensive unit and just that run of really good stuff from Pittsburgh, they built for me. And when I look at that brand and certain brands around sports, I think about certain units of the team. And when I see the Steelers brand, I still think defense to this day. And I know along the way, obviously throughout the decades, they've had some amazing offensive players.
On that team.
But when I see the Pittsburgh Steeler logo, AR, I think defense and toughness. And he was a part of the unit that laid the foundation for that franchise for years and years and years. And so you mentioned specific units like the steel curtain. That's going to stand the test of time. Like, that's timeless. That unit. And so, yeah, talking to guys that were a part of that is always really, really cool. And so doing that at the top of the hour is going to be awesome to pick his brain on how they went about it and why they were so dominant.
So when I say that when he got drafted, they weren't very good. He was drafted in 1971. In 1974, the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted four future Hall of Famers in one day. In one day. And they got a fifth that year who was undrafted in Donnie Schell, who we've had on the program before. So Lynn Swann, Jack Lambert, John Stallworth, and Mike Webster were all drafted in the same draft, and they all became Hall of Famers. And a lot of it is they were great players, and then you add them to just a great team, and everything fell into place. And an unbelievably legendary coach who probably doesn't get enough run in Chuck Knoll. So we'll have him on later today at 1 o'clock, top of the hour. All right, so this is a tough one with the Cavs, right? Because the result's the same, and it felt a little ugly, but I'm not going to come in here and crush them because they tried everything. And their message to their team last night was, Brunson's not beating us. He's not going to beat us with the amount of points he can have. And so certainly from a strategic standpoint, it was fine. What they miscalculated was when they brought all that attention to him that someone else, and I always say, hey, make somebody else beat you, and they did. Josh Hart beat them, and he was wide open every time. And when Atkinson got to the podium, he didn't say, hey, we got unlucky, but he went more with the they made shots and we missed shots. And he's right. Like, I can't come in today and say that I still don't think the Knicks are that much better than the Cavs.
I agree.
And last night was just kind of the old make or miss league. And one team was on fire, especially Hart. And Jalen Brunson is proving that when you take his shot away, you don't take his game away.
He's a playmaker. He has that in his bag as well. 14 assists from one guy in Jalen Brunson last night. 15 total for the Cavs last night. And that connects to everything that you just talked about on the Cavs side of things when they were getting open looks, and they got plenty of them in my mind. Like, I thought their process on offense was good. Like, they were getting the looks that they wanted. Like, Sam Merrill just didn't have it. He could not find his shot, especially early on in the game, where you just talk about time and time again, him being open, which is just crazy to see, because that's the one guy they're probably looking at and saying, we can't leave him open. And he just didn't, he didn't make them. And so that's the greatness of great players going back to Brunson, is that in game one, we saw down the stretch, is that guy, you get him in one-on-one situations, he's going to cook the guy in front of him more times than not, whether it's Harden or some of the best defenders in the league. And then game two, Atkinson and his staff reassess the situation and say, we got to get the rock out of his hands as many times as we can and hope that Josh Hart does what he did in game one, which was not make anything. He was one of five from three, and then he flipped it around and had a day. And even outside of what didn't happen for Sam Merrill, it was the guys down the line that were left open in Strus. Mitchell didn't have a day, and questions about how healthy he is right now from three. Well, whether it was Strus, Jalen Tyson, who got some minutes in this game, those guys just not shoot well. And so when you've got some of your best shooters going 3 of 21 from 3 on the road, you're going to find yourself in a tough spot, and that's exactly what happened. I didn't think they were bad on defense, AR. They only gave up 109 in the game. Like, I think you live with that. They just didn't have it offensively.
That's the lead. I agree with you. Their role players stunk. They couldn't hit anything. The praise I can give the Knicks is that Brunson knew exactly what the Cavs were going to try to do, and he said, okay, I'll beat you another way. Some stars, and this happens, say, I'm going to still do what I do, and then it turns into a one-on-two show, and it doesn't work out. Brunson's smarter than that. And Josh Hart, who had a great game, started 0 for 3. Like, he started, he was not shooting well, and I think at that point, nobody was guarding him then. Like, I don't know whether his bad start led to them feeling comfortable, but the big lead is the Cavs started 5 for 10 on threes and went 4 for 24 after that.
Most of it early. Yeah. He was doing his thing. And then Evan Mobley are only 2 shots the rest of the way after the first quarter. That can't happen.
Brunson, I think, had 2 points at half, and they were leading.
Yeah.
That tells you everything you need to know about the game. Like, if you play the box score game, you don't know the score, and I show you the box score, and you see Brunson has a deuce at half, you're like, Cavs put the clamps on him. They're in good shape.
Yeah, where we want to be. Connected with not only Hart's offensive output was his assist as well. I mean, 14 for Brunson, 7 for Josh Hart. So a guy that rarely ever does that at that high of a level, he showed up to the party and surprised everybody with what he was able to do. So now Atkinson and his staff now have to lock it and find a way to, do we go back to our game one game plan, or do we go stick with game two? I like the game two game plan. Make Josh Hart do it again.
They just don't have the balance right now. They were top heavy here. And what's scary about this series is the runs that the Knicks have been able to go on. To light up an 18-0 last night and to light up the run they had in game one, that's the scary part.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, AR, because I think this is just who the Cavs are, right? They just have shown us throughout the postseason they're not going to consistently be able to get stopped. So when you're that team, you got to make buckets, and they didn't last
night. Home cooking should help. Yep. Home crowd should help. Desperation should help.
I agree.
You'll hear from Coach Atkinson next, and also you'll hear from another Cleveland coach. Does Todd Monken really know his players? His reaction is kind of amazing. Rothman and Ice on the Fan.
We used to have a billboard with our host's face on it, but only ugly people work here now.
Your mama say you ugly. Hey!
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Last year, Eric Reeser and T-Bone staged the first annual Fan 5K. People had a good time and no one died. Yay! So we decided to do it all again. It all goes down Saturday, June 20th in Otterbein.
Presented by the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center.
Will Reeser's muscular calves explode? Will T-Bone's beard choke him while running? More importantly, will Tyvis Common Man and Timmy make total fools of themselves?
Maybe.
Magic 8-Ball says, signs point to yes. Register today at 971therace.com. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For the Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Catch the latest from the world of Ohio State athletics. Weeknights at 6 on the Buckeye Show. New special guests in everything Scarlet and Gray, the Fan. The perfect ratio of sports talk, dogs, pro wrestling, and gambling advice.
It's science.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
Listen, you know, could easily stole game one. I thought our process was right tonight, so that gives me confidence going home. Obviously, we've got the great home crowd. Have played well at home in the playoffs, so we need to get our legs under us. But honestly, like, you know, we know their rest advantage. So getting home always helps with that. But definitely probably didn't have the juice tonight that we needed to, which is kind of going to hit it sometime.
He's not wrong. It just comes off as we didn't curl up and die, so everything's okay. So I think last night was more of an answer to the critics saying that they weren't even going to be in the game, that their minds would be elsewhere.
Yeah, you and I weren't buying any of that yesterday.
No, these are professionals who, by the way, should take that as even more motivation. There's enough motivation in losing you add the way they lost in game one, and I could understand why people would say, okay, that might hang with them a little bit, but I was not buying that they're just going to curl up and die. And I actually would be, I'm not going to be shocked if they lose tomorrow night, but they're a 2.5-point underdog. They're at home. They play really well at home. Their building is probably even better than MSG on a lot of occasions. It just sounds like it to me watching on TV. Atkinson's right. I don't know. The whole rest factor, that's get your left. So I guess the follow-up is, well, what are you going to do, Kenny? Not practice? What is this?
They probably don't.
Is it Kenny Atkinson?
Yeah, it's Kenny.
Okay.
They probably don't practice that much anyway.
That's right. Yeah, hockey doesn't. Hockey's the same way. Right. These games are so, you can't, you got to keep your legs. So there really is no follow-up there other than, okay, stay off your feet. Listen, they loaded up on Brunson. He found others. Those others made shots. He's right. He's factually correct. They tried and they couldn't find balance.
Yeah.
Because the balance is, can you keep him from destroying you while also not leaving other guys open? And they couldn't find that balance last night because Hart knows his role. And then he does what's needed. And that's what I like about Josh Hart. They left him open after he started 0-for-3. Mm-hmm. And guess what? He burned him a lot. And like I said, Brunson knew what the Cavs were going to try to do, and he was patient. The big cat passed. Brunson passes. The Cavs role players have to make shots. I'd like to think they have enough stardom on their team to win. Plus, their defense, like you said, wasn't bad, but you know, it's kind of soft traps. They're not really working. It kind of like last night I watched, like they kind of had 1 foot in, 1 foot out. They really didn't know how to defend the Knicks last night.
I'm not going to go crazy about their defense, AR, because me personally, I've just kind of accepted what that's going to look like. It's just some of the silly mistakes, too, that happen like right out of the gate. Remember the play where Dean Wade is inbounding the ball and gives it right to the guy, and they get an easy basket. Like those type of buckets on the road in an atmosphere like that, especially that early in the game, can create an avalanche and put you behind the eight ball. But they responded again, and that's why I was with you coming out of game one, that I didn't think that at all this team was going to be shocked or fold or anything like that, because I think their run throughout the postseason has geared them up for this. And I think when you play in two game sevens and you already have chemistry that they've built over the last couple of years outside of Harden and a few other guys, you can come back in game two and showcase themselves the way that they did. Speaking of Harden, I do want to give him some credit, because it was a bit of a quiet-ish night to him. I think at this point in his career, he's 36. He's going to have some really good games. He's going to have some duds. At this point in his career, I just accept that's what he is. But no turnovers from James Harden was great to see, AR. We've been asking that from him all postseason long. It's the first game this entire postseason run to where he hasn't had a turnover. Wasn't perfect by any means, but I think that was a good sign to see that going up against that defense, that he can handle that well. So he's got to do it again, but that was a massive storyline all postseason long. Was this guy's just not taking care of the ball and no turnovers. I think that was a bit of a positive coming from him.
It's a bit of a positive. He still can't stop a nosebleed, man. He just can't. I mean, Cat was taking him off the dribble. I mean, he is who he is, but you're right. I'll look at it as a positive that he wasn't throwing the ball away and wasting possessions, because they really can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
It's the 18-0 run. It's just, that's the trouble. It's that they're in a game and then they're not. And the New York starters had so much balance. Look at their box score. I mean, every one of their starters and their role players were good and they won the game. But I will say this, the Knicks fans chanting New York in four or whatever they were chanting at the end of the game.
We want Wemby?
Well, I don't
know. See that after game one?
Easy.
They're already looking ahead.
And that's fine. Those are the fans. Those aren't the players. Right. I'm not going to blame the players for that.
Right.
But it makes you want to beat them even more.
Okay.
Like, the Knicks in four, when you know you're going to a place that's going to be tough, they're going to be desperate, they should have beat you in game one, it's a little too cocky. Like they need
it's
to come
New York,
down.
Man.
It's New York. That's what I'm saying. I'm not like breaking news here, but that's fine. You guys can chant that all they want. They're fans.
You know what I think's cool, AR? Is I like the kind of alumni row that the Knicks have behind one of the buckets, and it's like Latrell Sprewell, Iman Shumpert, and Starks, and all. I think that's really cool. And I was sitting there last night. And I'm like, I think that's the only team in sports that has that to that level, to where it's basketball. So many legends that come back and they're right there on the baseline. Yeah. Like, there's something about that I like.
New York.
Like, some of the greats just right there watching such an important game. You always know you're going to get Bateman and Fat Joe and Tracy Morgan. And Walt, but I think the alumni row that they have going on, I'm here for that. Yeah. I think it's cool.
All right. So this was funny from yesterday. So I want to say this very clearly. Myles Garrett is not the only Brown star that's not at OTAs. If he was the only one, I think this would be a story. If he was the only one. But the fact that Delpit and Denzel Ward are also not there, again, the workouts are voluntary. There is no immediate crisis here. But here's the story. The story is that if you got a new boss, a new supervisor, and you were hoping that the old supervisor was going to get the job, and you weren't happy about it, and they weren't, they wanted Jim Schwartz. And this isn't to say that, is it Rutenberg?
Yeah.
Who's their new guy? Yeah.
New DC up there.
So they got a new DC. You're just kind of hoping that they would come to the facility and take to the new boss the same way they took to the old boss, so they could feel kind of good about, hey, everyone's on board, we're professionals, we're moving forward. I'm not making a huge deal out of it, but I think the story is that if we got a new supervisor and we wanted the old supervisor to get the job, and then something came up here at the Fan where there was a voluntary Memorial Day picnic, and we knew the new boss was going to be there for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And the three of us decided it's voluntary. I'll see you when I see you, when I'm supposed to see you. It wouldn't be the biggest deal in the world, but it would send some message, I think, to the new DC. That's all. Not that they won't play hard, but it just will be there when we need to be there.
His presence and some other guys, but specifically Miles, him not being there for voluntary workouts isn't that big of a deal. It's not even a deal at all for me, honestly. It's not.
He's the star.
He's the star, right? Here's where I think it's a bit of a story, is that he and Monken have not met in person yet. That is odd to me. And the only reason why it's odd is because we know Miles has been in Cleveland. That's why it's strange. If we knew Miles was out with his new lady and he was just enjoying the all season, he's on the gram. And
it's a lady.
He's wherever he wants to be in the world with his millions and millions of dollars, then I would understand. Yeah. Well, he's not even there. But he's in the city. He knows the team is doing something, and he knows he's got a new head coach. You can't stop by and say what's up, or hey, let's link up and have a cup of coffee. Stop by the house. This is the face of the franchise.
Even if you want to go to the football point, Maddie, and just say, hey, just broad strokes, some new schemes, football talk, casual anything. Football talk. We're not running you through any major drills here. It's just like, hey, the new guy's here. Let's get his philosophy. Let's hear. I'm going to be, you know, you don't have everybody. You always know you're not going to have everybody at OTA.
Yeah.
But sometimes the stars set the agenda for the rest of the team because they're the ones that set the example. And what I said about Monken, like not knowing his players, it's like when he was asked this, and TLC has this, play the soundbite when he was asked about Myles Garrett.
Just for the record, have you had any face-to-face with Garrett yet?
Myles?
Yeah.
No.
And that was that.
Do they have another guy named Garrett on the team? Because if they do, then his response is okay. If they don't, wait, Miles? Which Garrett do you speak of?
Just for the record, have you had any face-to-face with Garrett yet?
Miles?
Yeah.
Miles? Miles?
Booby Miles?
I mean, we haven't met, but we're on a first-name basis.
I have a question for you, sir, that I would like to ask you after the break. About Myles Garrett.
All right.
And something that may or may not happen this weekend and whether or not you think it matters. We'll do that next in 2 minutes. It's Rothman and Ice.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio Sports Destination. What's up, knuckleheads? You're listening to Rothman and Ice on the Fan. It's not terrible.
All right. This is what we do in late May. They got a new coach, a new DC, first-time head coach, a DC that most people haven't heard of, a DC that had a very weird, unceremonial ending in Cleveland that came with a lot of, you know, perhaps a little bit of yelling or what have you with Jim Schwartz. And there was a little bit of, you know,
a little static there.
Yeah. Almost like I'll leave, but on my own terms, and I'll leave when I want to leave. And, you know,
okay,
nobody's getting issued a trespass warning. I'm just saying that it was just a little odd. And I'm sure his players who liked him a lot and respected him were like, damn, I wish he was staying.
Sure.
I wish he got the head coach job.
It's absolutely that, AR. And I think it's like as a player, too. Like, we love the system that we're in. Like, it works for me. It works for us. We have success with this guy. And I'm sure even bigger than that outside the football stuff is they probably liked him as a dude, too, and how he went about his business. So him,
the real dude's dude,
being in charge of the entire operation, I can understand why a lot of guys supported that. Clearly, the ownership group and everybody that makes the decisions up there had a different vision of where they wanted this to go. And they felt like they wanted to get things in order on offense. And Jim Schwartz, they wanted him to be a part of it, but Jim wanted to have full control. And he felt like he had earned it at that point. You could understand why his mind was there. And so they wanted the best of both worlds. Jim said, hey, you know what? You guys can kick rocks. I'm going elsewhere. And we haven't really heard from him. Like, I would love to hear his side of the story. I don't know if he'll ever do that, but that'll be interesting. But yeah, he's been out of sight, out of mind for a while. Now it's the Monken show, and he's got to hope that this Miles thing doesn't become anything. And I don't think it will become anything until we get to mandatory minicamp on June 9th. If that's the day and we're sitting here doing the show together, AR, and he's not there, then
He's not there, then something's really wrong. And then it's, then the trade talk will start coming again. And they
correct. So, but what if he's there tomorrow in Cleveland, courtside at game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals? Part owner of the team, brand ambassador for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I almost expect him to be there.
Does that send any type of, if you're Todd Monken?
No, it doesn't send any message. And I'll tell you why. Because if he's choosing not to be here now, I'm going to assume there's nothing wrong. He's not sick. There's not anything going on in his family.
Yeah.
We haven't heard that he has a family. There's no excuse that would be justified. He's only not showing up because he doesn't have to be there.
I'm here with my family.
If he said that, then it's okay. But that's why if he shows up at the Cavs game and he didn't go to OTAs, I'd almost expect it, because that means that his free time he's valuing right now.
As he should.
And that he's allowed not to be on house arrest just because he didn't go to OTAs. Like, I used to say this to you guys all the time that, you know, sometimes people have narratives where, you know, somebody will call in from work because their kid is sick. All right, that's big. Or something happened to the family, or somebody needs to get picked up from school.
Yeah.
There's no real difference between that and Matty Ice wanting to sit on his couch in his underwear playing video games, because that's your free time. I'm not judging that over someone that has something that would be deemed more important. So I know from a narrative standpoint, if Miles Garrett had something, hey, there was a family wedding or something, that there was a big moment that I had to be at, I couldn't be at OTAs, maybe it would optically look better. But if he shows up at the Cavs game,
just didn't know, AR.
No, I don't.
If
I don't
this
think
was
so.
Similar to the conversation we have about players being sick on the bench and
that's
smiling
totally
and laughing,
different. Totally different. That's a game that counts. And I always said to you, there's a difference between having an ankle sprain and being sick. If you're sick, you're usually in a pretty low mood. You're not feeling it. You might have a temperature, or you're fighting a cold or the flu, and you don't even need to be on the bench. Honestly, I don't even know why you would be on the bench. You could be on the bench with a twisted ankle.
Yeah, I just, for Miles, he's at a point in his career to where he's probably looking around and asking himself, do I want to be the defensive Joe Thomas?
Mm-hmm. He already went through this song and dance.
That's where this is going. That's where this his career, I think, is mirroring a little bit of what Joe Thomas did, meaning incredible individual success. He's got two defensive players of the year. If he gets a third, he's in elite company with only three other guys that have three in the history of the sport, with Donald and Watt and Lawrence Taylor, I believe. And so, yeah, for Myles Garrett right now, like, that's a question I'd ask. I'll tell you what, Maddie, I'll let you know.
Gong.
Because you're going to be courtside tomorrow, baby.
Not going to be courtside.
Watch out for AR not tomorrow.
That's also the wrong one. Actually, strike two. Finally.
Actually, I like the other ones better.
That's cool that you're going to the game tomorrow. Yeah. It's going to be rocking in there.
Yeah.
Are you going to be? Well, you're probably not going to be a Gen Pop knowing you, but they like to do like the t-shirt stuff. Are you going to be waving a t-shirt
around? Let them know. It'll look great on the dogs.
You got to participate, AR, I think.
Oh, if I get a free t-shirt?
You know, they like to do like the towels or the t-shirts or whatever. And then they'll like the beginning of the
rally
game.
Like,
I want you to be all.
A terrible towel? Well, I stayed at towels, right? They just wanted you to bring them back every time. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Just put them in a safe spot.
Wash it, bring it back.
Next week, you don't have to wash it. Unless you sneezed in it. Maddie?
Yeah.
I think the bet here is, will he be there?
I think he's going to be there. I think he's in the building.
I think he should be.
For sure.
And I'd be okay with it.
What if Monken is there?
Maybe they'll meet face-to-face for the first time at a Cavs game. At a playoff game.
Imagine if they don't. Imagine if Todd Monken is at the game.
Where would he be sitting? He'd be in a suite.
I think he's going to be on the floor somewhere.
Monken.
Behind a basket, maybe.
No, I'm going to say he won't be.
Okay, so you think he wants to be in the cut?
Wow. OTAs, how long is this? Is this done now? Where are we on this?
I don't know. But if you
exactly,
are,
that's
if
how
you
important
are Monken and you go find Garrett, Miles? If you see Myles Garrett there, and like obviously they're not communicating, so they would stumble into each other. But if they're in like different sections, and like maybe Todd Monken's like under the basket, maybe Myles Garrett's like behind the bench or something like that. If you're Todd Monken, do you go introduce yourself or no? Because it's kind of one of those things. It's like if you do it, then everyone's like, we're watching those two meet for the first time. That's weird. But if you don't do it, then everybody knows. Todd Monken and Myles Garrett knew that they were one section apart, and no one took the initiative to each other at all. No one took the initiative.
I'll keep an eye out on that for you. By the way, they come back after the holiday, so they're good now. They were off. Yesterday was the final day of the first phase of workouts, and they'll come back for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yep.
And then they'll come back again in early June for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Imagine the headlines they are.
They were a section over.
Oh, they didn't speak? Who do you think flinches
I don't know if Monken's going to be there.
Who do you think flinches first in this scenario? Monken or Miles?
I don't think Monken wants to even put himself in a position that he would feel obligated to go meet his player face-to-face for the first time at a basketball game. I think that's why you stay away.
If the Cavaliers invite Todd Monken, do you think he asks them, hey, do you know if Myles Garrett's going to be there?
Who's on the RSVP list? Are we in the same suite? Are we sitting next to each other? That would be awesome. Maybe the Cavs take it upon themselves to bring these two together. Just randomly invite both.
Sit them in the same row.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. I'd be very surprised. Not if Myles is there. Garrett? Or
Myles is in the building tomorrow. He usually sits.
I think that'd be the favorite. Oh, you know where he sits.
Yeah, because you can see him on TV. Like, he's right behind, not right, like, you know where the scorer's table is? He's, like, in that first chair right by the scorer's table. So, like, you know, the benches and the guys walk in front of their players.
So he's staring at a ref's behind for a lot of the game. Is that what you're telling me?
Sure.
All right.
He's basically Kenny Atkinson's bodyguard.
He's taking a little bit of talc shrapnel back in the day. All right. I'll be on the lookout, Maddie.
What time are you heading up tomorrow? You making a day of it, or what are we doing?
Night of it.
Oh, just...
No, overnight.
Oh, overnight.
Oh, yeah, this is...
That's how you do it.
It's a night game.
I like that. Okay, I like that. Didn't know if you needed to get back or not, but yeah, go to a little telly, enjoy yourself, man. Let them know, AR. I'll
let them know. The boys from Sugardale. The boys of summer. All right. We're going to come back with overs and unders. TLC has something that will dazzle the eye and illuminate the mind. Next, Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan.
.com.
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, ooh, just to name a few, live or on demand. You have no excuses, The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
Rothman and Ice presents Overs and Unders.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
Jack Ham, top of the hour. Steeler legend. Give me Ham on five. Hold the mayo. What do you got, TLC?
All right, so I've been taking a look at this On3 Top 100 list that they have for college football this year because yesterday, I believe, was 100 days until the college football season.
Let's go.
So that's our first benchmark, I guess. I don't know.
Let's go. Get rid of the summer.
I don't know when
we haven't even had spring yet, but let's go.
No, we are in spring with this rain every single day. We are in it.
Yeah, but summer's going to fly, AR, because Love Island starts June 2nd, and then you know what starts in July.
Big brother.
Is that your big brother?
So it's summer is about to be a wrap for you, sir. I'm here to tell
talking
you that.
To somebody, a little turtle, and we were talking just regular stuff, golf, and he goes, hey, AR, he goes, I'm not trying to wish the golf season away, but how are the Buckeyes going to beat you? Well, you just did. You just wished it away. It was just funny the way he said it. It was perfect. I thought of both you guys when he said it. Like, listen, I know it's raining right now and weekend's going to get washed, but we don't get to play much golf up here, you know, 5-6 months tops. But how are the Buckeyes?
We need you locked in on Love Island this season.
Why?
That is not a Rothman show.
But I think he may, after a while, get into it.
Love
I think
it's way too much of a. It's like golf. It's too much of a commitment unless you're really excited about it.
A group of single people move to a luxury villa in the hope of finding love in the summer of their lives. Throughout the series, there are shock twists and surprise announcements that will test the relationships between the islanders. And to remain in their luxury paradise and stand a chance of winning the. Is it 50 grand? Something like that?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds about
contestants
right.
Contestants must, quote, couple up and with the hearts of each other and the public as they ultimately decide who stays and who goes on Love Island.
Tap in for the first week.
Check out the lineup.
Do a little vibe check.
Give me a roster check.
Okay. You might like what you see. All right, TLC, what do you got cooked up, man?
All right, so the On3 Top 100 College Football Players for 2026. How many Buckeyes are in the Top 100 over under 4.5?
So, AR, the gimmies,
Jeremiah, Julian, probably...
Jermaine Matthews Jr.?
I was thinking more of Bo Jackson.
Okay, he was on my list for sure. I feel better about Bo than Jermaine. Not that Jermaine is not a great player, but is he at that level yet outside of Columbus? I'd be curious to know that. So, we're in lockstep. Jeremiah, Julian, Bo.
I don't think Devin Sanchez would be yet.
Not quite.
But yet. I think in our world, he probably will be.
Yeah.
So Kenyatta, what does that get us to?
Kenyatta Jackson had a solid season a year ago, but is that top 100 worthy?
On the edge.
He's another
guy.
You
said 4.5. Here's the other narrative that I'd like to combat, which is the offensive line not being known nationally as a real strength at Ohio State last year.
Okay.
Could we get one of these guys on there? Could you get a Austin Saraveld, a Luke Montgomery? Could you get one of them on in the top 100?
Fair question to ask, no doubt. Do we need to also think about a transfer portal guy that came in? Could they try to fool us with some trickery there? James Smith, mm-hmm. Earl Little, any of those mm-hmm. guys?
You fool me, we can't get fooled again.
I'd like to say that Ohio State being ranked in the top probably three preseason would have more than 4.5, but they're not. It's not a team outside of the big names we've talked about that's littered with household names yet.
So it feels like an under to me.
Who does the picking on this? Just a consensus of reporters from On3?
I assume that On3 has multiple contributors.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like an under to me right
Why?
Now.
Can't get to 5? We named like 7 or 8.
It's not that I don't think these guys are worthy of that. Have they proven enough yet, some of these guys? That's all.
All right, I'll ride with Maddie on the 4 or less right now.
The under is correct. It is only 4. I will piggyback that with how many defensive Buckeyes are in the top 100. I told you there are 4 total. How many are on defense? Over under a half.
Jeremiah, Julian, I said Bo. You dropped Kenyatta.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Bo.
I'm with Saraveld. I'm with somebody on the O-line. Anthony.
Ohio State will either win the championship
or have
0 players
in the top 100. One defensive player in the top 100. Up for preseason and being a top 3 team.
Kenyatta had, I believe, like 6.5 sacks or something like
you
that last
say
year.
Over.
I want to say it's him.
We're going to say over.
It's under. There are 0 defensive Buckeyes in the top 100.
Well, that should serve a little motivation.
And I can now give you all 4. Jeremiah Smith and Julian Sain, as we're expected.
What numbers are they?
I will get to those in just a second. Bo Jackson was a consensus there, and the 4th was Austin Saraveld.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Those are the 4. Where is Jeremiah Smith ranked? Over, under 1.5?
Who's going to be bad? I mean, who would you even imagine that would be bad?
You know what this kind of reminds me of, AR? The conversation that was had around Jeremiah Love leading into the draft. That he's the best player,
mm-hmm.
but he's not going to go number 1. So,
could there be a quarterback that's ranked number 1?
But I don't think it is.
There's only 2 that could be. Arch Manning or Dante Moore.
Dante
That's
Moore.
It. I don't see anybody else.
I think Jeremiah's number 1 on this list.
I think he is too.
You're both correct. Where is Julian Sain in the top 100? Over under 6.5.
Wait, number 6.5?
Yeah.
Oh, over. We just got done talking. There are people think he's not even a first round NFL pick right now. He's over 6.5. Gotta be.
I think it's over. Yeah. That feels right to me.
He is number 9.
Ooh, how many quarterbacks, unless you're going down this road?
Well, it's almost like you're reading my notes.
Okay, do your thing.
How many quarterbacks are in the top 10, over, under 4.5? And we'll wrap it here.
So we know Dante's
there.
He already gave us
Julian.
I can give you at least 1.
Arch, Dante, Julian. That would be it.
Arch, Dante, Julian.
Right?
Unless there's some wild card and somebody really, or they really like... I don't know. Like,
I would think under, or I think we have the guys.
Those 3 are for sure in there, AR. But is there somebody else we need to be talking about here?
Not that I know of. Not in the top 10.
Yeah, I'm going to go under. I'm with AR on this.
You're right, but you're wrong. It is under 4.5, but it's 4, not 3. They have Dante Moore at number 2. Sam Levitt, number 8. Julian Sain, number 9.
Sam Levitt.
Arch Manning, number 10.
LSU?
In the top
Correct.
10. Coming in from Arizona State.
Is he healthy?
Fair question.
There were a lot of comments about him in particular.
Okay.
He's kind of dominating the comments section.
All right. It's fun. It's polarizing. It's a good list.
Yeah.
I'm honestly impressed that Julian is where he is on their list. I mean, he's incredibly efficient.
Yeah. Yep.
And
well, it could be CJ Carr, who's ranked 85th.
Wow. Yeah. All right. We're going to come back top of the hour. We have a Gold Jacket Friday with the legendary Steeler Jack Ham from Kenton. That's top of the hour next. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
No hot takes, no dancing, plenty
of stupid. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Do you suffer from who can trust?
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Isaiah Jacob. Last night in the NBA, the Cavaliers fell to the Knicks 109-93. Cleveland now trails the series 2-0 as it shifts back home for games 3 and 4. The Cavs return to the floor tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. In Major League Baseball tonight, the Guardians visit the Phillies with first pitch at 6:40, while the Reds host the Cardinals also starting at 6:40. In NFL news, reigning MVP Matthew Stafford and the Los Angeles Rams have agreed to a 1-year, $55 million contract extension. And NASCAR is mourning the loss of Kyle Busch. The 2-time Cup Series champion passed away yesterday at the age of 41 following a severe illness. Busch leaves behind one of the most successful careers in racing history. This update was sponsored by Germain Toyota. For unbeatable service and sales, visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Brights Road or online at germaintoyota.net.
Rothman and Ice present Gold Jacket Thursday.
Presented by the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
All right, it's a massive Friday for us. Just a kid from Western PA, second rounder back in 1971, number 34 overall out of Penn State. 8 straight trips to the Pro Bowl, 4 Super Bowl titles in 6 years. Arguably the best outside linebacker in the history of the game. He was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the class of 1988. He was always known as the Iron in Pittsburgh Steel, number 59 in black and gold. We welcome back to Ohio the Jackhammer, Jack Ham. How you feeling, my man?
I am feeling great, especially after that introduction. I'm feeling really good.
Well, I'm motivated, and we are to have you on. It's so cool. Let's start back in the day. So explain to me who Steve Smear is and why you and I would not be talking right now without him.
Well, Steve Smear, it's funny you should say that. I just talked to him this morning. But he is my teammate at Bishop McCourt High School in Johnstown, PA. And when I went off after our senior year, he went to Penn State and was an outstanding player there for 4 years. I went off to a military academy, Massanutt Military Academy, for 1 year. And I thought I was going to go on to VMI from there. And my football career was not going all that great. And at the end of my postgraduate year, I was looking for a college to go to and just to go to school, not to play football, but to just be a student. And I was going to go to Penn State. But at the end of the year, George Welsh, who was the recruiter in that area, saw me play and asked Steve Smear about me, and Steve gave me a glowing recommendation. And somebody turned down a scholarship to Penn State and went to Iowa. I forget the guy's name, and had one scholarship left. And I ended up getting that scholarship in the beginning of May. You talk about not being a 5-star recruit, but if hadn't Steve Smear gone to Joe Paterno and given me I think he might have inflated that my career a little bit, but that recommendation put me over the top, and I ended up getting that last scholarship.
It's a really cool story.
So he was Steve Smear, and he's a dear friend of mine to this day. And you know, when people do something like that for you, you can just never forget it.
Yeah, no doubt, Jack. And it's appreciate your time. This is awesome to get to talk to you. And you were obviously a part of so much success as a Steeler. I want to lock in, though, on the Super Bowl runs that you were a part of. And when you look back at the 4 Super Bowl rings that you have and you look at those journeys along the way, is there one of those Super Bowl runs that sticks out to you more than the others that you're really proud of looking back at what you did and what the team did to get to that Super Bowl win?
Yeah, I always think it's the first one. It is a big hurdle in pro football to get through the division, get through in the playoffs, win playoff games, win championship games, and get to the Super Bowl and win that as well. And that's a tough road to go through. And getting over the hump, you know, we end up winning back to back twice. But the first one is by far the hardest. We had to beat the Raiders, they were our big rival back then in the AFC Championship game in Oakland. We had a win there, and then we beat Minnesota in the Super Bowl. And to this day, I think for a lot of the players on that team, in that locker room, and the chief, who was Mr. Rooney, the owner of the team, getting that Lombardi trophy, probably that is probably the highlight. And our first Super Bowl is really something special.
You know, Jack, it's interesting because when you went there, they weren't that good. And did you dream and want to play and be a Steeler anyway, just being a kid from PA? Was that always the dream, regardless of how good they were when they picked you?
No, not really. You know, I grew up in Johnstown. I went to Penn State and obviously got drafted here. I thought if I get drafted somewhere else, and the day before the draft, the Giants called me and they said they were going to draft me in the first round, and San Diego Chargers, the same thing. And being a naive kid at 21 years old, I believed those guys, but I didn't get drafted till Pittsburgh picked me in that second round, early in that second round. So I thought I was going to go somewhere else and give me an opportunity to live somewhere else for a period of time. If I wanted to come back, fine. If not, but I thought it'd be a different experience for me. But it couldn't have ended up better, because when I played in the college all-star game after my senior year, before going to Pittsburgh training camp, everybody in that college all-star game, from Plunkett to Jack Tatum and all the guys, Youngblood, all the guys I played with, it was like condolences they were giving me to go to Pittsburgh, because they were such a bad football team. And ironically, it turns out that draft and the draft in 74 put us into a championship form.
Jack, how do you feel about the current direction of the Pittsburgh Steelers, going away from Mike Tomlin, just the model of consistency as a head coach for a long, long time, and now turning the page to Mike McCarthy and running it back with Aaron Rodgers? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, number one, I think sometimes after a period of time, I think you lose the voice, I think, sometimes with a team. And, you know, Tomlin was there for a long period of time, just like when I played for Chuck Knoll, who I think is one of the greatest coaches of all time. But after a period of time, I think your message kind of runs its course, I think, and they made the change. But, you know, it's always the case. You know, in my era, we had Bradshaw. And when you have that quarterback and you can go start with that, you can build around that and build one hell of a football team. And until you get that quarterback situation settled, I'm not sure it's settled with a 42-year-old quarterback, but they got some young guys here as well, so we'll see what happens.
Hall of Famer Jack Ham, the Steelers legendary linebacker, with us on a Gold Jacket Friday here on Rothman and Ice. Who was more of a nut, Bradshaw or Jack Lambert? Seems like they were both kind of crazy.
Well, I think we have each one of them on each side of the ball. Bradshaw, which I always give him credit, because you know how quarterbacks are. Their egos are bigger than all outdoors. But he was a guy who could throw the football and had an incredible arm. But those first two Super Bowls, we're winning games 20-7, 2014. They weren't high-scoring games. But when we needed him to throw the ball in the last two Super Bowls, we're winning, you know, 41-25, and he's put all these points on the board. All he wanted to do was win football game. He didn't care if he got the stats. And as you well know, quarterbacks sometimes want those numbers, and it's refreshing when you see a guy like that who's one of the best players on your team care about the team thing first.
What were some of your favorite back and forth throughout your career, whether it was a specific team, a specific quarterback, like the matchups for you that really got you juiced up and ready to go?
Well, I think it was always the Raiders against Kenny Stabler, and that group was always a big game, because we're playing them normally a playoff game or a championship game. And I really believe back then, if they were in a different conference, we'd have been playing for Super Bowls instead of AFC championship games. But the team also that came on for us later on was the Houston Oilers, and Earl Campbell was just something special. I always kid other linebackers throughout the league. You never got to play against Campbell maybe once at the most. I ended up playing against him three times a year back-to-back, because we played him in our division twice, and then we had to play in the AFC championship games against him. And he was he's the best football player I ever played against. And he brought his game every time. And we were able to win those football games, but he was a guy that you had to pay attention to, or in pro football, he would embarrass you.
He's Jack Hamm. He's in Canton, and you can't miss him. He'll be the guy in the gold jacket this weekend, 12:30 to 1:45 tomorrow, Hall of Famer at the Hall. He'll do some meet and greets from 2 to 4. You'll be judging the Ribs Burn Off, a great weekend up there, the third annual. So you'll be judging and probably sampling as well, and you'll be helping to announce the winners and take some photos. It's so good to have you back in Ohio. When you think about the defenses, when they discuss them, the Bears of 85, the Ravens of 2000, your steel curtain for many years. Give me your best defense on why it is the best.
Well, I think it's the best because we could play that game on our defense any way an offense wanted to throw at us. You know, for example, the Raiders were a power football team, pound the ball, and then play action with Kenny Stabler. Then we played the Cowboys in two Super Bowls where they spread you all over the field, all kind of motion, different things. Any way you wanted to play on offense, we had a defense that could react to that. And I think the key for us, we had obviously Joe Green up front, whatever, but when you have that lockdown corner like Mel Blount on the outside for that long a period of time, he lets you do a lot of different things back there to, you know, to confuse a quarterback. So I know the all the defenses you mentioned are all great defenses, but we could play against any offense out there.
1975 Defense Player of the Year. Give me a quick comment on the change at Penn State and the transition you expect there at your alma mater.
Well, Matt Campbell, he brought in a number of quality players from Iowa State. He is an outstanding coach. We are very fortunate to get Matt Campbell. I think he's going to do a great job. Early in the year, we got to make sure you get that chemistry with your football team on both sides of the ball. That'll be important for us going forward. But I think Penn State was very fortunate to get Matt Campbell.
Do you have a favorite piece of memorabilia that you've held on to from your playing days or from your teammates?
No, not really. I mean, the things that I've, you know, the Super Bowl rings, the Hall of Fame rings, I really don't wear them. It's the experience. The experience with Joe Green and then after winning our AFC Championship game in Oakland and flying back with him. Those are the experiences with Mike Wagner making big interceptions in Super Bowls. So, you know, it's the chemistry you have with those players means a lot to me. So, no, I don't have any one piece of memorabilia.
I thought maybe you'd be the second part of Joe Green, hear a kid catch. Maybe you'd have a jersey.
What a great commercial that is.
Best ever.
The side of Joe Green that most people have not seen.
Best ever. Hammer, this was amazing. Be well. Enjoy your time at football heaven. You deserve it. Soak it in, my man.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Jack Hamm, the Steeler legendary linebacker, up in Canton this weekend for their third annual Ribs Burn Off. It's all free. They've got so much going on up there, including Jack Hamm. And if you haven't been, this would be the weekend to go. We'll come back with the pressure cooker, Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's Steve.
Good news. Jack has personally invited the Fan to the Memorial Tournament, and we're broadcasting 30 hours of live content, and we'll try not to embarrass ourselves.
Sponsored by Ohio for Responsible Gambling. Visit pausebeforeyouplay.org.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For the Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Question from a listener. Do you dopes ever get tired of talking about Ohio State? No. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Under Pressure.
Sponsored by 3D Cabinetry. 3DCabinetry.net, where quality meets affordability.
All right, one of my favorite weekends with the Indy 500. Hopefully the weather will cooperate in the Circle City. I'm going to put the pressure on Pato O'Ward. Pato O'Ward needs to exercise some demons, and I'm hoping that the racing gods finally choose him. Will he time the right pit stop late in the race for that stretch run? He's starting sixth, outside row two, pretty good spot. However, there's a real, I mean, as far as pressure goes, forget about just the result in itself. So he has to turn now to his backup car. Maddie, imagine that you're going to a big event. You get invited to some big, glitzy, five-star event.
The Met Gala.
Yes, and your date is ill. And now you have to go to the backup date. I feel like that's what's happening here. And so he spoke about, he had a wreck on Monday, and he's got some nerves because it's not the car he's been using all month that he has to go into the race with on Sunday. It's not the one he qualified in, and he hasn't done any different race simulations. But when he started talking about the backup car, I'm wondering if this may turn into a stroke of luck for him.
A bit of a different story, I would say, this year. First time that I don't use the car that I've raced here with the accident that I had on Monday. But it's this car that I'm racing with. She's been very good to me. I've won with her before, and it's behaved well. So I'm not worried at all. I've had my Speedway car that's been with me since 2020. Every single year, I've done the exact. I've raced with the exact same car. Her name is Lana, but Lana's a little bit hurt. Her crash structure was hurt. And she wasn't going to be able to make it, not because she didn't want to be there, but because, well, someone else ate her lunch.
Lana, it's what you want. It's what every white boy off the lake wants. Lana is the backup.
Ready to go.
And Lana is going to take him to victory lane, I hope. It's unbelievable that he's... I mean, I'm sure all guys do talk about their cars that way. But the fact that he has finished second there twice and third last year, like he's so there. Mm-hmm. And now he has to use Lana to try to get there. And maybe the backup date turns out to be the winner.
Might be the one. Let me ask you this, Anthony Rothman. You're gearing up for a big-time golf tournament this weekend, let's say. Is there one club in your bag right now that if I removed that would have you feeling a little off? So the normal car that he has maybe has him feeling a little off, but there's some confidence there. But is there one club in your bag to where I said, AR...
Every golfer would answer this the same way.
It's the putter.
And then probably the driver.
Okay.
What about the driver?
It would be the driver, although you could probably get 3 wood off most tees.
Yeah.
It's the putter. The putter's the only item in the bag that technically you want to look down and feel confident. It's not really built. The technology's in there, but it's not like it's feel, it's trust, it's confidence. Yeah.
Without that,
you had to go with a backup putter.
Maybe you'd be
now. If you make the first one, like, I love it's this on. Thing.
Throwing the
if
other one away.
If you miss the first one, it's over. So, okay, Lana, it's what you want.
Let's go, Lana. Let's go. First candidate for me this week. I'm going with a guy that used to hoop at Gonzaga. I'm going with Chet Holmgren, AR, because I feel like every time I watch the Thunder and the Spurs play, I'm disappointed in what I see in Chet Holmgren. I don't know what it is. This guy is a hell of a player. He was drafted second overall a few years ago. But when Wimby is out there, this guy is just a shell of himself. He hasn't had double-digit rebounds in 4 straight games going all the way back to their series against the Lakers. But in game 1 of this series, only 8 points, 2 of 7 from the field, 50% from 3, but it was only 4 attempts, so you'll take that. But the overall body of work on offense for Chet Holmgren is just not good enough. And so both teams right now dealing with some injuries on both sides. If Jalen Williams isn't going to play in this game tonight, I think Chet's going to have to be the guy to step up and help out OKC steal one of these games on the road in San Antonio. And so he's a tremendous player. Probably would have won Defensive Player of the Year if Victor didn't win it. But I think this is such a big deal for him mentally right here, right now, because this matchup against this team, but more importantly against that guy, isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So I think he needs to gain some confidence against Wimby, and I think it's got to happen in one of these games this weekend. So I'm going Chet Holmgren, and I'm putting him on the pressure list.
Took a shot to the side of the head, too, last game, and kept playing. Showed some toughness there.
It's he kind of gets punked a little bit.
Well, he's a gazelle out there amongst some of those guys.
And it's just like, he himself is 7'2". You know what I mean?
Yeah, but so he's it's a just kinda spindly like, dude. I mean, he's
Wimby's not the strongest guy either. He's not. Because he's so good against everybody else. And that's the Wimby effect. I get it. I just know he's better than that. So I think there's some pressure on him to be better.
All right. There's equal pressure on both the Carolina Hurricanes and the Colorado Avalanche being down. But they're both still favorites in their series. Okay. But I'm going to put some pressure. I know someone that's probably feeling pressure is Cale Makar. So one of the elite, if not the elite, defensemen in the league. And my goodness, do the Avs miss him. With no Cale, they're off. Their entries, their exits, they overpass, they lose their aggressiveness. When they do shoot, they're off target. They stop back-checking the same way. They're just, I mean, the top two lines kind of vanished, and Bednar had to put it in a blender the other night. And I thought Torts' group had some better juice to them, and they survived. They weathered the first storm. Their goaltending is a little better right now, which is odd because of the way the Avs have had pretty good dual goaltending all year. But I certainly think Makar, the presence of not having him because he's here, he's there, he's every blanking where. Defense, power play, penalty kills, the works. Like, that's who Cale Makar is. And I just checked 5 seconds ago, and he's out for game two.
Mm.
And I thought, listen, he gets hit one time, probably on the shoulder. He's back to square one. But I thought he'd feel the pressure to say, because they lost game one. If they won game one, that buys him time. If they lose tonight and go down 0-2 on their home ice, then they definitely become underdogs, even though they're such a good team. If it's the shoulder, who knows? One hit, he's done again. And like I said, they didn't buy themselves any time. I think it's a massive game two. And in 9 playoff games, Makar has 4 goals and assists and has averaged like 25 minutes of ice time per game. So obviously they miss his defensive dominance and his offensive skill. Cale Makar has got to be feeling some pressure. Maybe they can buy a little time if they can win without him tonight.
Okay. Second guy for me is a man that was born on January 2nd, 1999, down in the Dominican Republic, and a guy that I'm so happy I did not take in the Dinger draft. Because I don't know what's going on with one of the faces of the sport, one of the most electrifying guys in the sport. But Fernando Tatis Jr., here on May 22nd, doesn't have a single home run. This guy, throughout his career, he's going to get you at least 20. He has 20 home runs in every single season except one. And in that season, it was only 59 games. That was the pandemic year. He's got 1 year where he has 42 home runs as well. Again, not one home run this year. He's only got 5 doubles on the season, too. So we're not even racking up extra bases. There's just no power for a guy that has shown plenty of that and then some. And then on top of that, AR, the man's batting .239. So it's not even like, hey, you're doing the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for Matty Ice. You're not hitting for power, but you're hitting for average. He's really giving them nothing. So for a team that's playing well, can they get away with this for an extended period of time in the same division as the Dodgers? I don't think so. I think they need power from Fernando Tatis Jr. It's got to start at home this weekend.
All right, I'll stay with baseball because he's been gone for 14 months. Gerrit Cole is finally ready now to reclaim his throne atop of the Yankees rotation. And they confirmed yesterday that he'll be reinstated. He's back. He's going to pitch against the Rays, so a very big game. And a moment a lot of Yankee fans have been waiting because he had the Tommy John surgery over a year ago. He's had some minor league appearances. He's touching the upper 90s. You believe what you read. So the stage is set now. Yep. This is one of the most anticipated returns in recent Yankee history, and a lot of people think he's ready to go. So Gerrit Cole in that elbow. Let's hope it holds up under pressure.
It's cool. It'll be a fun matchup. Two teams in that division. Last candidate for me quickly. Masai Ujiri is the new president of basketball operations for the Dallas Mavericks. I think this is a huge offseason for him and his reputation. He comes in a couple weeks ago. He makes the decision immediately to get rid of Jason Kidd. Head coach, all-time player, we know all about that. But the reason why there's pressure on him now is because of Cooper Flagg. This is a fan base that is scarred by the whole Luka Doncic trade to the Lakers. And now he's got to come in and make sure whoever the next guy is going to get Cooper Flagg in the place that he needs to be. He was also the president of basketball operations in Toronto when they won the championship with Kawhi and all that. So he knows how to build a contender. But you know, we know Cooper Flagg is legit. Now he's got to start to build around him and make sure that guy can reach his potential.
Nice. That's party or pressure for today. We come back in 2 minutes. And does a certain extension in the NFL change the theory about a certain draft pick? That's next. Rothman.com.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
Need about 8 or 9 more of those. Just have those be every time. I'll talk to the man. When I heard this story, I actually thought this did matter. This did change my theory. This made the Rams look worse. Their pick of Ty Simpson. That them signing Matthew Stafford to an extension makes the decision to draft Ty Simpson look really odd. It does. But I know he's not going to be there forever, Stafford. Because when he announced to everybody in February that he was coming back for his 18th season, he did it during an MVP speech, basically. Like, so it was one of the things where you're like, okay, he's not going to be around forever, but he can still play and maybe mentor the young guy. But this is very against what the Rams have been about, which is lean in and try to stack some Lombardis and
blank them picks, baby.
Yeah, it's weird. So they signed him to an extension through 2027. So they tacked on another year to his current deal. And I think most people have reacted positively based on the player that he still is. My question is, why did you draft Ty Simpson if you were planning on signing your veteran quarterback to an extension that includes $55 million in new money? Like, on paper, it just looks like what it does for me, Maddie, is it says outside of an injury, you've just told us that Ty Simpson can't see the field until 2028. Minimum.
Yep. Because there's $105 million remaining on the deal that you just talked about. The new extension is 1 year, $55 million. So good for Matthew Stafford at this point in his career, because he is now what, 39 years old, 38 years old, somewhere in that window of time, coming off a career year. So he couldn't have timed it up any better. Last year for Matthew Stafford, career high in passing touchdowns with 46 of those to go along with 8 interceptions. That'll win you the MVP more times than not. If they're right, this won't matter. We only come back to this story if the Ty Simpson pick is an absolute nothing in the years to come. There's not a ton of dislike for me going on right now, because I do think that within the same offseason, where they make a questionable move in Ty Simpson, they have still been aggressive with some of the things that they've done. So I think they're trying to live in both worlds. It's always a questionable thing to do at that position. We did it with Penix and Cousins. We did it with Jordan Love and Rodgers. And there's been other examples too. So if this is a 2-year thing to where Ty Simpson does not play, but then behind the scenes he's ready to go and getting everything in order that it requires to become a starting quarterback at this level, it's not the worst thing to me. It's just odd that they would do this and not really go the other way and just be completely all in. But at that position, if you have a chance to grab a guy, clearly, that they believe in that high in Ty Simpson at 13, they probably feel like, AR, we're not going to be picking that high over the next couple of years, so let's do our business now at quarterback.
I think it's a very good point at the end there that you just said about that, about where they hope to be and then where they would be in the quarterback pecking order. The more I think about it, this may be a way to protect themselves against, let's say Stafford decides to retire after this year, bails on the last year. Well, that's okay too then. If he doesn't and he goes year to year with how he feels, then this contract just gave him a raise. That's the only reason they did it then. Mm-hmm. They tacked on 2 to cover ourselves, and if he plays 2, great. That means he's playing well. But it's interesting that the contract now looks like kind of a safety net, Because if it would be more difficult to actually do a contract with him if his deal was going to expire after this season. So now they tack on another year and the Rams can, you know, keep it the way it is in 2027, or they could revise it again. But there's still a chance. See, now the chance is very slim that Ty Simpson becomes a starter next year. That's what it says to me.
I agree with that. I agree. You know what would be scary for me if I were a Rams fan in this whole entire deal is if we get to the end of the road of the contract for Stafford, whether it's at the end of this year, next year, whatever it may be, that McVay also goes at the same time. Because if I were a Rams fan, that would always be in my brain that those reports did come out that he was thinking about retiring. And then you connect the dots to that with the energy that McVay was giving everybody about the Ty Simpson pick coming out of the draft. That's just something that I'm going to keep in the back of my mind, AR, to see what happens, because maybe McVay won't be the coach for Ty Simpson at the end of this thing for Stafford. I don't know.
Well, then the whole thing gets flopped on its head, because my biggest concern if I'm in that front office is that if Stafford comes back next year, not just this year, but he does play out the contract, then I've got to decide if I'm picking up Ty Simpson's fifth-year option on one season of football. Then that what it does is it's counterproductive to me liking him and picking him. Because now, will I really know what to do? Now, if he lights the world on fire in his first year, and he makes Orlovsky look like a prof, like some guy that just owes the mentalist, then everything will be fine. But that's not going to be an easy choice for the Rams in one season as a starter. Also, with the limited experience he had in college starting, that I have to decide whether I'm picking up his fifth-year option during the 2029 offseason, when I haven't seen enough of him to know that.
I can't, and that's fair to question that for sure. I can't remember whether or not I remember us talking about the Packers hitting Jordan Love with some type of new money without him really doing much of anything. And I don't know if it was he hadn't played at all or if the sample size was really, really small. And that was just the world of unknown at that position that I think can be a little scary that you're talking about. Is committing. Now, you're talking about a fifth-year option versus an extension over years of time. So that's clearly a much tougher decision to make. But I have something in my brain that's triggering right now about Jordan Love and the Packers, and they hit him with some money, and maybe I questioned a little bit at the time because I didn't know what he was. And now that the deal that they have looks pretty good for him at the moment, but I'll have to go back and look. Do you remember feeling that way at all about the Packers and Jordan Love?
I remember feeling that way more about with the Rams with Jared Goff.
Okay.
I remember feeling like, why are you paying him now? Like, you don't have to.
Pre-Super Bowl?
Whenever they gave him that big deal, I thought it was too early. I'd have to go back and look at it, too, about Jordan Love, about that extension. But they did give him a lot of money. I know that. And they believed in him there. A lot of these teams are trying to get ahead of it. Because if you can get Matt Stafford, even in 2027, as a $55 million quarterback, you almost feel like it's a bargain.
You do. I got it right here. It was a one-year deal in 23 for Jordan Love before he was the starter. So it was a short-ish extension that they gave him, but he hadn't gone out there and done anything.
That's right.
But I think it spoke to their confidence behind the scenes and what they saw him do, right? And being around Rodgers and just the day-in and day-out preparation, that can lean yourself into some confidence, but time on task on Sundays, Mondays, and Thursdays is completely different, as we all know. And so going down that path of darkness, I think, is tough. But that's what it was for Jordan Love. 23, it was a one-year extension, and then the four-year deal came after that.
Every one of these teams is trying to do one thing, usually. Stay ahead of the quarterback situation in any way you can. And they're willing to take risks. They feel they've scouted him.
Yeah.
They feel good about him. They lean into the positive. They're not rooting against their guy.
It's exactly what Atlanta did.
Yeah.
I love that you use the word risk, because that word applies to Michael Penix in all caps. And I wonder now, are they regretting that? Because what one of their biggest fears was with him coming out was his injury history.
Yeah.
And now I hear Michael Penix is again recovering from another knee injury, I believe. Can't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head. But that whole situation, I wonder how much regret in-house they have with the Cousins contract and then drafting Penix and knowing that he's a guy that's been through it physically, and now here he is just a few years here going through it physically yet again.
A lot of this is stuff that fans wouldn't care about or want to care about, and I somewhat care about it, but it's sometimes these deals are done to spread money out over years and caps and signing bonuses, and it's not anything the fans really have to deal with. What the fans care about is, did you sign the right guy?
That's it.
Did you pay the right guy? Sometimes you overpay, sometimes you get him as a bargain. Yeah. Because I'm looking back at his contract, and he got a $75 million signing bonus, Jordan Love. And the extension kind of like tacked on 4 years to his old deal. But the main part of it, or the main thing I'm getting out of it, is it does allow them to spread out those cap hits. The bonus spreads it out over years. So a lot of this is done. Now, to your point, you have to really believe in the player.
No question.
And now Ty Simpson is going to sit.
For probably 2 years.
Unless Stafford decides, I can bail on the last year.
Yeah.
And then they've blown another year of Simpson's deal where, like I said, it comes back to the, how much do we need to see of this guy if we want to pick up his fifth year? Because clearly you drafted him where you drafted him. You believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
You're not 13. Rooting against your own guy.
Right.
We come back with the Buckeye Bulletin. Rothman. Hey.
Mornings on the Fan have never been larger. T-Bone is large. Tybus is getting large. Get large with them. T-Bone and Tybus.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9.
Your home for large people and larger personalities. The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. Home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Rothman and Ice present Buckeye Bulletin.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Save up to 50% on new windows from windownation.com.
I'll take a poll here in the studio. Where is your fatigue level on discussing college football expansion?
I've reached my limit.
Oh, you're at, that's
just,
it.
Just for this week. Like, you get me through a weekend and I'll be recharged. But sitting here this week, not us, but just everywhere. It's 24 and 16. The Big Ten wants this. SEC wants this. It's like, fine. Okay, so I'm kind of, for this week right now, I've reached my limit, I think, on the topic. Come back Tuesday, I'll be ready to go. But I have some fatigue now. I do.
I was going to say, I haven't maxed out yet. I am hosting Sunday and Monday, so check with me Monday at 4 o'clock, and I may be completely done with it forever. But yeah, you guys aren't here, but we're having a special Memorial Day show.
Look at you, grind.
Saw an opening, hit the hole. I meant that literally. Like, it's probably going to come up Sunday. It's probably going to come up Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be knee deep in all of it, and then
thigh deep.
By the time that I show up to work on Tuesday, and you guys are like, "Hey, I've never thought about that." I'm like, "You guys take it." I'm sitting out that segment.
You're burnt out, but yeah, I get it.
I have there is like some sort of like angsty enjoyment out of watching this sport just kill itself right in front of us because I have this.
I don't
whole,
think it can.
I mean, look, I'm always going to hold on to the fact, myself included, like, the games are going to be on in the fall, and we're going to watch them. But I do not consider what is taking place. Like, I really care about, like, the history of sports and, you know, not trying to turn everything into, like, a GOAT debate or anything like that. But just from generation to generation, I really care about that stuff.
I do, too.
And I feel like this current iteration of college football is so disrespectful in a way to everything that I watched before it that I just don't consider it a part of it. Like, I don't have that kind of motivation. And so it's doing it to itself.
You've basically said what a lot of people have felt for years, that money ruins a lot of things. And the difference is the results don't speak to it. Because I could sit here and tell you that the NFL should be ruined by now. Free agency and going to different teams and no loyalty and ticket prices and just crazy salaries and players doing stupid things and nothing has ruined it. And with college, the same way, we've gone now to players making more than coaches and we even discussed, you know, the portal and guys going to three or four different schools in 5 years, and nothing has ruined it, and especially in college, because the emotion, and I'm not saying the emotion people have. Let's take a Browns fan. So the emotion a Browns fan has for his or her team is immense, similar to what a Buckeye fan has. But I always looked at college as a little more, just even a little more emotional, that despite knowing that you could have a receiver making millions of dollars to play college football and go to school, yeah, that they still, at the end of the day, want Ohio State to win more than anything in their lives. Maybe even more than they want to achieve success in their own life. Like, honestly, like it solves a lot of hurt for people. It does.
It's real.
And nothing ruins it. And you and I had countless conversations about LIV Golf. And I said to you that it just hurts me. I'm glad he even used that phrase. It turned into a funny thing where I was, you know, so anti-LIV that it became kind of a deal on the show. And I brought in Live and Let Die. And I feel like there's a mini victory lap. It's not even over yet. But this is what hurts me the most. What hurt me is that guys that I really, really admired, who I thought were playing for tradition and money, I get the money, yeah, but it was like, I want to win Jack's tournament. I want to win that PGA Tour event because they've been playing it for 70 years. There's history there. And when I heard Bryson DeChambeau say, well, if I don't play on the tour, I'll just become a YouTube golfer. This guy's won majors. Like, what was driving him, the motivation was just, all right, I'll just swim in money and be on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's fine, too. And that's his life. But that's what hurt me about it, is it dissolved the tour that I love so much and the tradition of some of these events. And I'm into things evolving in sports. They have to. That's why I'm not going crazy about the NCAA tournament. That already was busting at the seams. Who cares that they play another 4 or 8 play-in games?
Yeah.
It's not bothering the main bracket for me. College football is getting into a weird spot where we don't know right now whether the regular season is going to mean as much or anything to us when everything will be pushed towards the playoffs, mm-hmm, similar to March Madness. Not that you wouldn't watch an Ohio State basketball game, a good regular season game. Yeah. You would. Just wouldn't have the consequence. And we're starting to get to the point where that could happen with college football. You're now, right. I did read something yesterday that was interesting to me. Actually, Bruce Feldman, we were talking about it with him, that could Ohio State Michigan actually be worth more if they get rid of the Big Ten title game? Like, now that you don't have that, could that be a pseudo-championship game many years? It's possible, but I don't think anything can... I think people can be mad about it and feel they're hurting the game.
Everybody's showing up to the party, I think.
Seems like it.
What would turn me off, because I don't want to speak for everybody, is if somehow, some way, the sport itself became gimmicky. Meaning, what I'm seeing on the field changes a lot.
You might in some of those playoff matchups.
I'm saying, like, yeah, rules within the game, AR. Like, that's what would, like, the sport itself would have to change.
Like, if the NFL kickoff went to the college game.
Or just something even crazier than that, TLC. Like, I don't know, some wacky rule. Like, hey, college football's going to 3 downs instead of 4. Like, something like that. It would have to be something so crazy.
They were talking about getting rid of kicking altogether at some point. Remember?
Which I'm not that mad at. But I'm just saying, like, if the structure of football is what it is, and some of the traditions and all that are still there, I'm going to be there.
Would they have to change the name, Maddie? They got rid of kicking. Would it just be ball?
Well, the NFL has, no pun intended, kicked around the idea of dropping, or I don't even know if the NFL considered this, or if other people were just suggesting this for the NFL, yeah, but dropping the onside kick and substituting in at 4th and 15.
Which is entertaining.
I get your point, though. And I will declare it again. It's not that I'm not going to watch the games.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, I don't need to watch Shawshank again. We don't need to watch Seinfeld again. On Saturdays in the fall, the games are on. We'll watch them.
For sure.
It just doesn't feel... It doesn't feel important.
The regular season?
Yes.
Yes, and that's my biggest beef with this.
Like, dude, the race... The competition for taking over number one in the rankings was huge.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that was like everything. Mm-hmm. And now it's just like, this feels like, in the worst way possible, this feels like minor league NFL. Like, these guys are all just like chasing their own NFL dreams. Like, the games that they're playing don't really matter because they're all playing for a draft stock. They're playing for their money. They'll play for their draft stock. It doesn't feel like the games that are being played, and because the stakes are lowered because of the expanded playoffs, it doesn't feel like Saturday to Saturday we're watching history. Yeah. It used to feel like
that's fair, and I think I agree with everything you said. And AR, you brought up basketball. And TLC, you're talking about the vibe around the regular season. You know how we can watch a number one fall in college basketball on a random Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever it is, and there's not really that much care about it because you know you have the wiggle room to recover, yeah, and there's so much more road to go. Like, that's going to be a little bit of the energy for me around college football in the regular season.
Dude, Northern Illinois winning in South Bend was one of the biggest upsets of my life. Yeah. Notre Dame played in the national championship. Yep. Come on.
The line that I've quoted from Smokey and the Bandit, like, for the good old American life, for the money, for the glory, and for the fun, mostly for the money. Like, that's where we are now. We'll come back, top of the hour, deep dive. SEC versus Big Ten, though. It's fairly big, and it's heating up even more. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
We are your radio home for the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. We may have a bit of a football problem.
Oh, yeah.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Sent you.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Isaiah Jacob. Last night, the Cavaliers dropped Game 2 to the Knicks, 109-93. Cleveland now heads back home, trailing the series 2-0. The Cavs return to the floor tomorrow night with Game 3 tipping off at 8 o'clock. In MLB action tonight, the Guardians continue their series on the road against the Phillies with first pitch scheduled for 6:40. The Reds are also in action tonight, hosting the Cardinals with another 6:40 start. Ohio State is making an addition to its football staff, as SMU recruiting assistant Kylie Green will fill the opening created earlier this month following the departure of Nick Murphy. And the racing world continues to mourn the loss of NASCAR star Kyle Busch. The two-time Cup Series champion passed away yesterday at the age of 41 after battling a severe illness. Busch leaves behind one of the most successful careers in NASCAR history with more wins across the sport's top three national series than any other driver.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at OrthopedicOne.com.
All right, final hour, Jensen Lewis, bottom of the hour, 2:30. We'll talk guards, Red Hot Guardians. Maddie's Reds, 4.5 back in Milwaukee, still very much in shouting distance there. Let me know what year this is. The guards and the White Sox leading the division. Or White Sox are like 3.5 back. And
the Guardians part, that's kind of the norm for us. They've earned a lot of our respect based off their consistent play. But yeah, the White Sox and where they just were. Like, it's honestly crazy in the world of sports what we saw this year. The Detroit Pistons being an absolute embarrassment just a couple years ago, and then the White Sox being an absolute embarrassment. Both teams are really, really having a lot of success at the current moment.
It's the hidden value. It's the counter to the argument that money's ruining sports. It is a little bit of a counter in that I remember when you and I discussed this about college football, and you were like, keep it at 4. And the one thing I brought up to you was, we may get some matchups that we've never experienced. We may see some new blood in there, which gives it a little bit of a good feel. Maybe I'm more into that than you guys, about seeing a little bit of an underdog program show up out of nowhere.
We just saw it this year.
And we just saw it to the
to the highest level.
Theatrical level, being 16-0 and Indiana football.
Oh, we're talking about. I thought we were talking about the White Sox.
Oh, well, no. I was bridging off what he was saying, which is that we're seeing team like free agency and transfer portal and new coaches and like the hidden value of all this movement and the conference homogenization. Like everything kind of like I hate the geographical stuff. You know, like that. Like I said to TLC during the break, Maddie, that college football's like taking a little piece of me every few years, just taking a little piece, like teams in the West Coast joining the Big Ten. Like it's just taking a little piece. Yeah.
The ACC covering three different time zones.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The sport has become so money hungry That's why we're
here. Well, we're here because they couldn't keep the players down any longer. And what I mean by that is, I remember when we were discussing years ago whether they should even, what players should get paid. And I thought they could have band-aided it better if they would have given them a little more freedom. Because what we were watching were coaches who were getting paid millions, bailing on their teams whenever they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. With the ability to come back in whenever they want to.
And the new school that hired them would just foot the bill for the buyout.
Yep.
We want you badly. We'll take you. This was my dream school. I've got a better team here. So we're watching these coaches get freedom that the players didn't have. And I think that's what was the initial thing that bust through the wall.
Yeah.
It was like, how can you prevent these guys? Because we had the conversation of, okay, you can transfer, but you can't transfer within the conference to keep the competitive edge proper. And I thought that was okay. Then it was, you can transfer, but you've got to sit out a year. Okay? So it's not, you don't get that instant where you can just hop on a team and go. So I thought all that stuff was pretty good, but it was just a Band-Aid. It was a Band-Aid because the coaches weren't staying loyal mm-hmm. to their recruits and their teams. And it turned into, well, how can we expect this of our players if they're the ones that are driving this whole thing? And I think that's what really turned it. And I don't really know, like I said, I don't really think Buckeye fan truly cares, because they still care about their players and they still care about their coaches and they care about winning. They care about being the best. And they're still doing that to a really high level.
Yeah.
And the pain of the players only makes them even more like gods in the fans' eyes. It's not doing the opposite. It's not saying, oh, like, wow, this is the joke. Aren't these guys supposed to be going to school and getting an education and getting a degree? Yes, they have scholarships, but they don't even have to go to school. Or they're getting paid so much they'll never have to attend a class. And I think it hasn't turned anybody off. It's almost made them look like, I can't believe we have a $5 million receiver. And so they're actually stating it as more of a gloating part of it. Like, we're getting... So now the tail's wagging the dog, whereas it's... People were initially like, yeah, this sounds kind of sleazy, this buying players and paying for players. Now it's more like, hey, when are we going to buy some players?
I don't watch games on Saturday and think about the dollar figure. So I was trying to think during the break of things right now around college football that I don't love, and it's the conversations all the time just about the playoff and all this stuff. Like that, to me, when I get to Saturdays, that stuff's not mm-hmm. in my brain. So while I might be a little turned off by some of that stuff right now in May, when we get to August, September, and beyond, I don't personally think of that. It's not in my brain at all. Like, I'm enjoying what I'm watching. And so this is where it's going. Like, they're not going to turn back the other way. Now, that absolutely isn't in the cards. And so we just have to accept this and move forward mm-hmm. and hope that what we watch as far as the sport we love isn't turned into something we don't recognize. The overall business of the sport has completely changed, but the game itself is still, I think, something that I'm going to enjoy. And if that's the case, AR, then I'm kind of okay with where this thing is going.
Yeah. The games are, you know, at times, the games are very competitive, and the playoff has been somewhat competitive, not early on, but it has been. And when you get a juggernaut like Indiana was last year and rolls through Alabama and Oregon, and then but they played a really tough game against Miami and almost lost, like the championship game was great last year. Very competitive, went down to the wire. Ohio State played and lost a couple very close games, and the Ohio State-Michigan game still means a lot to people. They don't care how much it costs. People are still going. They don't care if tickets are $250, $300, $400. They're
going.
It's
the same thing, because you're so right. It's the same thing, and you guys know I'm a big wrestling fan, that WWE was just going through, is that TKO took over this thing, and they were charging fans through the roof to just get in the building. People were complaining about it. It was a big, big talking point. But they were looking at the numbers and saying, well, we're still selling out houses. We're still selling out arenas. And so college football, the NCAA, they're hearing all this noise that's out there right now, the pushback that's out there from the traditionalists when it comes to fans about paying players and all that. But even the people that aren't caught up in that but don't like the thoughts of a 2014 playoff, 16-team playoff, they hear that noise, but they still know at the end of the day, we're going to have so many people consuming this sport that there may be a vocal minority.
That's it.
It's never going to turn into the majority.
I said it last week that until they know for a fact they're going to lose customers at a massive rate, whether eyeballs watching or people going, until they know that for a fact, they're going to keep trying to expand for money because the TV networks want it, their executives want it, the administrators in college want it. The only real argument right now is, how do you replace conference championship games to recoup that money and make more? Honestly, I think that's the conversation. Because the SEC wants, what, 16? And the Big Ten, everybody else wants 24. Because I think the SEC looks at their SEC championship game as being something pretty massive. Like, that's something they would love to keep if they could.
They were one of the first. They had that since 92. So they were way ahead of the game in terms of just having a conference championship.
Makes a lot of money for them. The other thing they probably look at is that on most occasions, we're going to get the bulk of our conference in a 16-teamer.
Mm-hmm.
Where the bottom of the Big Ten can only really take a bite at this thing if there's 24. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like
based off of last year's
Iowa, kind of, USC, Michigan, teams like that would be in it if there was 24. And I'm wondering if that's the real difference between the SEC and the Big Ten right now.
It'd be something they would like to brag about, I'm sure. So I think you're absolutely on to something. I don't think they love at the moment all the chirping that's coming from our neck of the woods about the Big Ten winning three in a row and all that. So I think they want to reclaim as much power as they can because while, yes, the Big Ten and the SEC are the kind of standalone power conferences of the sport, the SEC wants to be leaps and bounds above the Big Ten because for a while, that was the perception, is that top to bottom, and especially at the top, that the SEC runs this sport. And now that's kind of been flipped on its head. And so if they want some of that energy back, then I'm not surprised if that's part of the reason why they want 16.
They just feel like their conference from top to bottom is more talented than the Big Ten, despite the Big Ten being better up top right now and having some top-heavy teams that can win a title. But if they can get Vandy in and Texas isn't left out, then they feel much better about a 16-teamer because why do they want to open the door to teams that aren't even in their conference?
Mm-hmm.
Like just, and they're trying to, I guess, hold on to a little bit of the regular season and that championship game because of how much money that can make. Because if you get rid of those, you get rid of the SEC title game. See, the Big Ten's probably thinking, okay, we're willing to give that up for the 24 because that's going to get us in this thing. And then that's the money we can recoup. Where the SEC goes, you know, we can look at the rankings. We don't have any teams between 17 and 24 that we're worried about.
Right.
That's you guys.
It's your problem.
Yeah.
Not mine. I also don't know. And this is just a knee-jerk
year-to-year
reaction.
Thing. It's not every year.
It's my knee-jerk reaction is, as I really don't know if it's that clear. It's clear cut that the SEC top to bottom is that much better than the Big Ten right now. Like, I don't know if it's that clear, definitive, the way that they're making it seem.
Yeah, it's clear to a couple people. Maybe we'll play that soundbite next. It's clear to one coach, okay. And maybe a couple. You'll hear it next, Rothbusend.
Think you know Buckeye football? These two say, hold my beer. The Beat with Austin and Berm.
Sponsored by the Waterworks.
Daily on the Fan's YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Your home of the Buckeyes, the Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We are going to see some heavy rain develop as we head into the afternoon and evening. Could see some localized flooding, so make sure you stay weather aware. Temperatures getting into the mid-60s with breezy winds, and then for tonight, the rain continues overnight. It will be steady, and temperatures down into the upper 50s with the breezy winds continuing. For the Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The Big Nine was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Rockman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, there's a nice split going on between the SEC and the Big Ten. This fight is not on the field, and that's why it's tough to really care a lot about. But as fans of the sport, you have to care, right? You just have to. If this thing goes, doubles up right away and turns into a mini March Madness, that is not going to feel good. The games will still matter. You're still playing for seeds. You still can't lose too many and feel good.
But, AR, let me ask you this, sir. Can you promise me? Can you promise your boy that the games will be good when we get to the college
playoff
football
games?
Can you promise me that?
I can't. Well, yeah, but you're used to watching. So here's the counter to that. The counter is that 6-7 Ohio State games a year are blowouts.
That's real.
I mean, people don't care about that.
But we're not dressing that up as this. These are the most important games.
I agree, think that's, but every game is important to Buckeye fan. Every game. And all we're talking about now is, have you seen their schedule? And what are we talking about? Texas, Indiana, Oregon. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about three or four of the 12.
Talking about
we're not saying look at the 12. We're not.
No, Ball State, that's accurate.
Maryland, Northwestern.
Well, put some respect on Ball State,
Nebraska.
Sir. Put a little respect on Ball
you
State.
You did.
Sir. It's
the ramp up game to Texas. Watch them actually give them a game, right?
I don't know why I said that. I don't know why.
Came out real fast. You were just. I know why you said it, because it was a game that counted.
Right. Like, you know, you're coming out of the
ramp up
season.
Was being nice.
It's your first official game.
If you would have called it a warm up game, we wouldn't have had the same reaction.
Tune up.
Tune-up game would have been fine. He said a ramp-up.
Well, let me tell you, when they go from Ball State to Texas, it will ramp up. So he's not that far off.
Go. Okay, so I'm accurate. I'm accurate at that. Okay.
So the television factor is always interesting because the partners are split, and Fox is endorsing 24, and Fox is the Big Ten's primary broadcast partner. So maybe that's why Petiti is towing the network line.
Remind the folks who the primary partner is for the SEC when it comes to TV.
Oh, that'd be the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network.
Yep.
And they hold the college football media rights, and they're the SEC's only TV partner.
Mm.
And they have a different desire.
They do.
They prefer no more than 16. Anything bigger than a 14 triggers a clause in ESPN's $8 billion contract that allows the CFP to be taken to the market for other broadcasters to potentially outbid the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. Now, I don't know if anybody would do it based on we're talking about a playoff, which sounds like money, but it's also bad matchups, bad early run matchups. Remember, this is not the NFL. The parity does not exist at that level. Mm-hmm. And so 9-24, while I do think we would see an upset or two, it'd be actually rare if you didn't see an upset of some proportion if they went this big. It happens in March Madness. It probably would happen in football, not to that level. But the contract runs through 2032. So that's the part I find interesting, that if I connect the dots, and we always follow the money, and if the ESPN's only partner is with the SEC, and if they go higher than 14, it triggers a bidding war, then of course, I mean, you don't have to be Fellini to figure out that the money is driving the conversation, because why else? Like, I sat here in the last segment and said, well, maybe it's because the SEC, well, that's money, the championship game, or maybe because they always know they're going to have most of their teams in the top 16, so that's good, but I don't know. I mean, Petiti's case for 24 is, it's just clear to me that it clears the first weekend of December for conference championship games. It opens room for the playoff to begin 3 weeks earlier. And the national champion, which this I actually do like, would be crowned no later than the second Monday of January. But I don't know. Let's hear what Lane Kiffin has to say about, he believes, a fairly sizable difference between, in general, the broad difference between the SEC and the Big Ten.
I think it's set up in a good way for the top heavy teams there right now. I think now, and it's going to get better. We're going to 9 games, and our bottom is harder than theirs. Okay, and our bottom stadiums, you know, are harder than theirs. So we're going to beat each other up more, and they're going to sit up there and have 2-3 hard games a year, you know. And so their top teams and our top teams, when they go to the playoffs, okay, they're in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff matters. You know, it's why, like, I've always been a proponent to stay at 8 games and let us make our own, whoever we want to play in knockout. Don't tell us who we have to play.
Right.
And we would do, like, the model of the last place I was just at. Look at our, we went 20-0 in non-conference regular season games at Ole Miss. 20-0. We didn't play any of them big, like, openers. This place went in a four-year span, lost three or four openers.
Yeah, they played hard games at the
openers. So you played, yeah, that's so great, whatever. Well, you don't get rewarded for it because it's not worth it enough in the strength. But also, that schedule where half your games you don't have to get up for, it's just a mental toll that you got to play when you're getting up for. Plus also, man, your good players are out by the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So your play count at the end of the year is less.
Mm-hmm.
One of the really good teams there rested a couple of their good players in games at the, in conference games at the end of the year.
That's fine. We also, you guys also schedule Wofford.
Thank you.
A week before a rivalry or the end of the game. You get a bye week necessary. Like
and,
you do.
And you're also losing me when you start talking about venues. Me personally, I don't care. I don't care about
those
that.
Those could matter.
That's what I said. Yeah. Me personally, I don't care.
That is kind of based on how good your team is.
Yeah, it's like really lame. And then you try to play the card of the medical reports for all the Big Ten teams. Like, oh, you guys are healthier than we are. How do you know?
Because Tim May sat on him.
He doesn't know that for a fact. He just believes that.
And that's
by playing not another conference game in a conference that he believes is not as strong.
Those are just a couple of the things that I'm just like, okay, Lane. Like, that was
a train.
A little reaching going on there for
me. These are Josh Pate, who covers college football, wrote something. Let me get the date on this. This was back in March. And he has the top toughest college football stadiums. Okay? You guys haven't seen this.
No, but I could probably rip off a few of them, and I'm sure it's, you know.
Go ahead, Maddie, rip them off.
LSU and Bama at night, and I know where this is going.
Well, there's nothing here day or night.
Okay.
It's just the stadium. There's no time of day.
What did he rip off, though? How'd he list them?
Would you guys like to see how many of the 10 you can nail of this list?
Get the music ready.
Yeah.
Remind me of the topic again.
Remind him of the top. Can we have the question again? These are the top
language of origin.
These are the top 10 toughest college football stadiums.
Okay,
Kyle Field. They're in there.
Kyle Field, Texas A&M.
Yes, Texas A&M.
They are number 8.
Number 1 is LSU.
They're in there, but they're not number 1. Tiger Stadium is number 2.
Ugh. The Swamp. Is that in there?
Who does number 2 work for?
Florida. Flow Rider.
That would be what? Ben
Hill?
Yeah. Benny Hill Griffin Stadium.
Peter
Griffin Stadium. That would be number 5.
And who made this list?
Joshua Pate. Do you want to know what the topic is again?
I was
top 10 toughest stadiums.
I was writing a tell the truth question. Okay, Josh Pate. We'll keep it down south. Let's go. Is it Sanford Stadium?
Sanford and Sun Stadium, the little one next to them. Georgia, that is correct. Sanford Stadium. Maddie already mentioned Bama. Bryant Denny.
Yeah.
All right. So that's
Bryant Denny Stadium. I mean, so we have A&M, Bama, Georgia, Florida, LSU.
Would he have put Neyland in there?
Neyland is number 1.
All right.
Interesting. Number 1.
The Vols.
We're 6 for 6 so far.
Can we go 4 for 4?
We've only picked SEC schools.
That's what I'm saying. That's the whole point of this exercise, to see if there's anybody outside
Did he put Darryl K. Royal Stadium?
Who Texas?
Yeah.
Mm. Darryl Royal, dance with the one that brung you. No.
Okay.
Not in there. Jordan Hare is in there.
That's a good call.
Number 7.
There's 7. Okay, so
there are three Big Ten schools in here.
Okay, well, we've cleared the 7 non-Big Ten schools.
Michigan, Penn State. Penn State for sure.
I bet you he put Nebraska in there, not Ohio State.
It's not a bad call. It was a wild
Ohio
card.
State is not in there.
Okay.
Nebraska.
Michigan is not in there.
Penn State is.
The Beeve. The Beeve at night.
For sure. Got to have that. Is Oregon in there?
Autzen Stadium, Eugene.
I wasn't even thinking.
They are in there at 4.
What year
and there's
is it?
One other one.
Not in Nebraska?
Nope.
Kinnick?
Nope.
From the Big Ten?
Yep.
Washington. There we go.
Husky Stadium.
Yep.
Sailing the boats. Sailgating.
Yeah, whatever.
We're coming back with Jay Lou in 2 minutes. Can the guards keep it up? Rothman
is strong.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
At your own risk. It's time for some chin music with former big leaguer and president of the Bald Is Beautiful fan club, Jensen Lewis.
Sponsored by Logan AC and Heat Services.
Feeling the heat?
Call the experts at Logan Services now for hot deals on Trane air conditioners.
He's the man. He's Jensen Lewis, Beeson by the Books and MLB Network Radio on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems bullpen phone line. I'll hit you with the big one first. How was the old birthday doubleheader, Top Gun, Maverick, the whole deal?
Oh, my God. Boys, great to be with you as always. I don't feel 42. Maybe I look it, but the old 21-year-old still in there. The arm, not so much. We're glad we're retired there. Outstanding. Again, my first time seeing Top Gun original in the theater. It was me, Michelle, and two other people, and it could not have been any better. Just the thrill of a lifetime. One of the formative movies of our careers. So loved to see it. Had a nice little gentleman's dinner, if you will. At Lanning's, the two of us got to a little KC strip, bathed in truffle oil, some of the best El Grad potatoes I think I've ever had. So if you're in the Northeast Ohio area, highly recommend Dean Martin's Lanning's for a night you'll never forget.
Thank you, Dean Martin. All right. Hey, real question about that. When you're at this fine restaurant, did the server write the order down or just go around the four of you and say, all right, I got that, I got that, I got that, I got that?
Yeah, mental memory. Could not have been more punctual. The service was 10 out of 10. My glass never got below halfway in the tank there. It was constantly being watched over. And I got to tell you, it was an amazing experience for sure.
We talked about this the other day on the air about how I don't want my server to not write it down. Just
okay.
Get it right, write it down.
Yep.
And a mutual friend, Tim Belcher, texted in during that conversation, and Belch says to me, you don't impress me by taking my order and not writing it down. You'll impress me when you get it right, so write it.
So that sounds like a mound visit. Hey, you're going to impress me when you get this guy out. Don't tell me you can get him out.
That's it. The Guardians are on fire. They've won 6 in a row, 9 of 10. They're red hot, and this streak has launched them to the top. So now they're 3.5 up on the White Sox. So I don't know what year this is, but they typically wouldn't go all in and suddenly become buyers. Is there a deal that you would anticipate them exploring? Anything for a top middle order, that a bat in that lineup? Could you see them adding to the offense, and should they?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty left-handed heavy guys when you think about it. Schneeman, who's now been put into the leadoff spot with dropping Kwani down there. Of course, DeLauder and Manzardo and Bazana. Yeah, that's basically your 3-4-5, right? It's very left-handed heavy. Your only switch guys are Angel Martinez and Jose Ramirez. So from a theoretical matchup standpoint, of course, you would love to find a right-handed power bat. But the numbers don't lie, guys. And this is still the beauty of baseball, where you can read the numbers and they make absolutely no sense. This team currently is 26th in team batting average, but they're 10th in runs. They're 10th in on base. They may not be getting the hits, but they got plenty of traffic and they're making it stand up. I think the most important part is the bedrock of this group, right? It's a starting rotation. You know, Gavin Williams, who gets the start tonight. This might be, not often, guys, do we see totals that are at 6.5, but this might be an advantageous spot to buy up tonight, pay a little juice under 7.5 between Gavin Williams. And oh, by the way, here comes Christopher Sanchez, who's on a 29 2/3 inning scoreless streak. So what a setup you've got for tonight. But AR, make no mistake, you're always looking to add middle of the order offense, or at least lengthen a lineup, because we know what wins in October, right? You got to be able to generate swing and miss on the mound. You got to be able to slug and hit the ball out of the ballpark.
You brought up the left-handed bats in the lineup. Let's lock in specifically on one of those, and that's Travis Bazana, because this is the guy that I think is showing some promise as of late, Jay Lou, with what he's doing at the plate. Racked up a nice amount of hits in the Reds series and in the Detroit series as well. So just talk about what you've learned about him since he's come up to the big league.
Yeah, the last, I think, 7 games, and even if you want to go back to probably May 13th, that's 8-game stretch. He's hitting 406 an OPS of 924, and it really feels like the game is slowing down. Only 6 strikeouts in 33 plate appearances, so that's excellent. It feels as though he's adapting quickly. We knew that the bat-to-ball skills, at least from all the scouting from the last couple of years and his quick ascent through the minor leagues, that was a tool that would translate quickly. I'm anxious to see where the power kind of goes. Again, a couple of homers. You're only 21 games into your big league career, but boy, what a great addition there, and the way that he's generating offense, hitting usually in that 5 spot, been a boon here to help out DeLauder and Manzardo.
All right, so the Reds tie the tourniquet on here, but that division is getting weird. The Brewers now have become hot. So the question, and Maddie would admit to this, the bullpen needs help. Now, if you were kind of running things or looking at things, do you wait for that help, or do you go outside and get it?
Yeah, I think the hard part is if you look at just Santion and Ashcraft, and I'll even throw Brock Burke in there, the overall body of work is actually pretty good. It's just that everyone has stunk here the last 2 weeks, and it kind of has that avalanche effect. Once it gets going, it's hard to stop. Fortunately, you know, you've got Burns and just the unbelievable season that he's had. He's going to be an all-star, barring something unforeseen here. But I'm with you. When you look at where you can augment your club, remember, this is a Pagan hamstring injury that, I mean, it was just so hard to watch in Chicago. The oblique injury for Caleb Ferguson hurts too, because those are two really good leverage arms. And of course, your closer at the beginning of the year. So it's easy to say now, AR, that yeah, you're always going to be looking for bullpen help, and I still think they will. You might, though, be getting into the Great American Small Park days as we get to the end of May, early June, where it starts to heat up, you get the humidity, and I think it's going to help the offense. Make no mistake about it. They can hit the ball out of the ballpark. They've just got to be more consistent getting on base. They cash in when they do that. It's just kind of been that ebb and flow here. I mean, Sal Stewart, back to where he was at the beginning of the year. Spencer Steer, been a nice little addition. Blade has kind of tailed off just a little bit, but you need contributions at the bottom of the order, guys, 6 through 9. Anything, any contribution right now would feel like an absolute boost, because I think the top and the middle of the lineup have been carrying the day.
Would they lean into, hey, we can get some starters back, and that fills the need?
Yeah. Oh gosh. I mean, you think about Hunter Green, and they're not going to rush him, but you know, if you get him back before the All-Star break and you keep treading water here, you know, the shoulder issues with Louder in Williamson, that's always tough, because it is a Bermuda Triangle sometimes with the shoulder. We kind of know what to do with the elbow, but sometimes when you have those shoulder injuries, it takes a little bit longer to get it isolated and get it rehab. The gift that keeps on giving, guys, we usually say, is the American League Central, because it doesn't feel like it's ever over until the final weekend of the season. That played out last year. I think the same can be said of the National League Central this year, because you got some teams that are playing way over their skis. For instance, expected win-loss record right now of St. Louis. They should be 24-25 with their run differential. They're 28-21. When you look at the Cubs, we kind of talked about their rotation issues. They've actually been able to tread some water here with those issues. Can they do it the next couple of weeks? We'll find out. Reds are just 2.5 games out of a playoff spot entering play today. I think they're okay. Still not fully healthy. When they get there, I think they're going to go on a run.
All right, you got in our last minute, J-Lew, any bets popping off for you? Anything jumping out to you in your mind this weekend or tonight that we should be looking at?
Yeah, I would say the under 7.5 for that Guardians and the Philly game. Garrett Cole's first night back. I think the Yankees, I think the boys are going to kind of answer the call here against the Rays. One nugget for you. We had Jack Arute, a great, great IndyCar analyst on our show earlier today. He says, live bet the leader at the Indianapolis 500 on lap 185. Go back and look at the winners of years past, and whoever's in the first 3 rows, if you want to take that before the race, those are your 2 keys for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Down the stretch, that I don't know what live odds you'd get, but you're right. You try to find somebody that maybe isn't leading there, and then bet that person live.
Love it.
At 185.
Love it.
Any home runs for Friday? We got 3 of our guys going in great matchups. Okay. Jordan for Maddie, Alonzo for me, and Olson for TLC. They got great favorable matchup metrics.
Boy, Olson against Yuri Perez. Oh, boy, that might be interesting. Hey, okay. We could see some runs at the Great American Ballpark, too. I mean, it's Leahy and Paddock. We'll see what happens.
All right, my man. Have a great weekend. Enjoy.
You got it. Thanks, boys.
It's our guy, Jensen Lewis, on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. You guys been keeping an eye on those home runs? Because I think that one of those three guys, which is odd that I've asked him, because I think the metrics really line up tonight for one of those three to hit one.
Okay.
Either your guy, Yordan, my guy, the Polar Bear, or Matt Olson for TLC.
I sure hope so. But
how are we doing now at the end of the week here? You don't have to do the whole calculation.
Well, I already did the whole calculation early in the show. There's a little bit of movement because
up top,
one particular player in the pool has 5 home runs in his last 8 games.
One particular guy in the pool
has 5 home runs in his last 8 games.
Team Iceman?
Not Judge. Who, Yordan?
We couldn't keep down Juan Soto for that long.
No. Uh-huh. The man that y'all laughed at. Y'all laughed at your boy taking victory laps on me and Juan Soto when he went down.
Is Eugenio Suarez back?
I think he's back. I think he is. I think I just saw some.
They got rained out, by the way.
Yeah.
Reg just got rained out.
That's at
split doubleheader tomorrow.
At home against St. Louis.
So Maddie doesn't have to go down there tonight. He was all ready to go. O's is coming back for a return engagement.
O's the fraud is what we call
him. That's awful. By the way, rarely agree, but you have to admit that Cowherd stole that whole segment. I mean, we were in lockstep.
Mm-hmm.
He even used the woman getting sawed in half analogy.
I'll give you Pablo's response in the next segment.
All right. Tell the truth coming your way next. Rothman
knows. Join the fan weeknights at 6 for the Buckeye Show. And if you're asking if it's just a bunch of homers rooting for all things Ohio State, yes. Yes, it is. Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes, the fan, Ohio sports destination. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Tell the truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Tell the truth, Maddie. If I see Garrett Miles in
just for the record, have you had any face to face with Garrett yet?
Miles?
Yeah.
No.
Do you have another Garrett on your team? So if I see Garrett Miles in the bathroom, should I pull a Matty Ice and go full Ed Reed and try to grab that selfie for you?
Please. And also ask him, do you still want to be in Cleveland? Still want to be here?
No, we know he doesn't.
Of course. Does he truly want to be there?
What do you mean? He signed
there
on the dotted line.
Well, that $40 million a year will do it.
He wanted the money. He didn't want to be in Cleveland.
That's it.
He wrote the letter. He put it out there.
Think about that. He wrote a letter clapping back at his GM.
I'm not going from Cleveland to Canton.
I mean, think about
amazing
that.
It's amazing.
And here we are. Betty was smiling ear to ear.
This is so funny because sometimes, like, I view what we do as just like us kind of talking to fans and interacting with fans. Like, you know, the listeners who are driving around in their cars tuning into this show are predominantly sports fans. And so I mostly think that with athletes and the people and coaches and people actually involved in this stuff, that like all of the noise surrounding this stuff, I'm just like, why would they care about what we're talking about? And then you have Myles Garrett putting out a very public letter like that requesting a trade. Like, no, he does care what, and I'm sure, and he's not the only one, so I'm just using him as an example because of what we're talking about. But like, no, people do care what people are talking about on the outside. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of them want to jump into the discussion.
$160 million can make you reverse course
all day.
That's exactly what happened. The goal was never to go from Cleveland to Canton.
I love it, man.
And then right after making a trade request, he's ear to ear on ready to go. I'm excited.
Hey, man.
I mean, I'm excited to meet my coach one day.
Money solves a lot of problems. It causes a lot of problems.
No doubt. I think all of us sitting in this studio, I think everybody listening would do exactly what Myles Garrett did. Everybody. Hey, I may not really want to be here, but I'm not passing up on that. I'm not an idiot.
Couldn't he have gotten something like that somewhere else?
But he would have had to wait a couple of years, right?
They weren't.
Because it was an extension.
Yeah, they didn't want to trade him.
No. They did not understand why they didn't and probably still don't. And I don't think this is going to be a thing. I think he'll be playing for them come fall.
All right. Do you believe he will, if he's at the game, he will be shown on the network?
On the, whoa, that's a good.
Will he be shown just on the Jumbotron?
Yes, for that. But not, is it only? Because NBC.
WNBC.
No, ESPN, whoever the broadcast is. I don't know if it's ESPN or NBC, but
they're not going to stream it.
As much as we love
NBC,
as much as we love the state of Ohio,
it's
and
on
the fine,
by the way, it's on ABC.
It's on ABC. So the
WA, it's on NBC on the Western Conference is on NBC.
Yeah.
As much as we love Ohio and the cities in Ohio, we know that Celebrity Row at a Cavs game is not the same as it's going to be at Madison Square Garden. So if the broadcast team has plans of showing the celebrities that are in the house, he will be one of them.
He'd be the one.
He'll be one of them. And you.
Yeah. Hang on, that deserves a... All right, what do you got for us? Take us home.
I told you before the break that as we talked about Colin Cowherd basically kind of defending Oz the Mentalist, saying, yeah, he's a magician. Like, big deal. You outed someone for doing tricks. That's what this is all about. And so, he called out Pablo Torre by name, which, by the way, I give Colin Cowherd credit for, because there's this weird tradition in this industry where if you call somebody out, you kind of walk it back with, I don't need to say their name. You know who I'm talking about.
The verbal subtweet.
Yeah, it's like, well then, say their name.
Twitter.
What it is, right?
But being a feline, just say their name. Like, we all know who you're talking about. So, Colin Cowherd, I give him credit because he mentioned Pablo Torre's name multiple times.
Yeah.
As he then, you know, kind of went after him. He's like, oh, yeah, what? I bet you next you're going to tell us Penn and Teller didn't actually saw a lady in half.
Kay. Basically saying, like, I said the same thing when we did it. It's O's the only reason he came across as a guy that was
a witch
reading your mind. And so he didn't come out with this, I got a great trick for you. But why should he say that? He's not doing card tricks.
He's doing mind tricks.
Yeah, so it went unsaid. Thanks for, that's why I said the other day, I don't want to live in that world. Thanks for ruining it for us, Pablo. I know that doesn't happen.
But here was Pablo's response, because he quote tweeted this clip of Cowherd. And he said, this would make sense if Oz's book and TED Talk didn't sell people on learning the, air quotes, skill of mentalism, decoding body language, nonverbal cues, etc. This distinction is why I reached out to Steve Baskin in the first place, as our episode explained, blah, blah, blah. So
it's a good point.
And I haven't read Oz the Mentalist's book, but I will take Pablo's word for it. I assume that he has. And so apparently Oz the Mentalist has been selling this as a skill of mentalism.
That's tough for Oz.
Maybe Oz over time has picked up on some mental cues from people.
That is quite the spin doctor job right
there. Defense attorney in the house.
Wow. Maybe over time.
Maybe he started as a magician and then became skilled.
Maybe there isn't a god. Maybe somebody that's been around so long, they know everything.
Well, Pablo Torre claims, and I'll take his word for it, that Oz the Mentalist in his book is selling that.
The book is a problem.
It's a skill.
The book is a problem. You just can't outrun that. Yeah, you can't sell it as a skill. That's just robbing people right there.
That makes Oz look bad because he's outing everybody else as having not read his book.
But there have been a lot of people that have written controlling mind books, meaning your mind is a powerful weapon. Here's how you can use it better.
AR.
Like, there have been those people.
Just take the L with your boy.
It's not an L for him. It's just an L for all of us.
You don't take many of them.
The magic community. Because if it goes away and all those fun things go away.
You and all your homies at the O's headquarters, just take the L. That's all. You guys, it's okay. You don't have to defend your boy.
You're the one magician who is defending him, because Pablo Torre said in the clip we played yesterday that everyone else is like, F him.
Correct.
Brought all you guys in here to defend me. The only guy I got on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
I've heard it before.
Yeah. Movie? Oh, wow.
When in doubt, TLC.
No.
Not that. It's not A Few Good Men.
Nope.
I've seen that movie.
God, if you could end the week on this, that'd be another
say the line again.
Core power in there for you.
We got 20 seconds. Say the line again.
You were all brought in here to defend me, and the only guy I got on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Nope.
Oh, I felt good about that one.
You got to tell us there. What is it?
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Oh, Jurassic Park. Geez, yeah. I do know that was made in 1993 or debuted or whatever in 1993. Random trivia that I know. We got to go. Common Man and Timmy coming up next. It's Go to Jail Friday. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday. AR.
Enjoy the holiday. Be safe. Thanks for listening. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
There's nothing Bo Bishop can't do well except find competent co-hosts. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The